Good morning, everyone. It is 9:02, and the council members will have a seat. We will start our meeting. Thank you very much, and welcome, everyone. It is 9:02, and I am going to call the briefing meeting to order. We have Barat Davi, priest of Bab, here to do our invocation. Would you please stand and join us?
Will you please fold your hand like this so we can work together from our heart?
Harihi Om Jauhu Shanti Rantarikshagum Shanti Hi Prasavi Shanti Rapah Shanti Rokhadayah Shanti Hi Vanaspatayah Shanti Vishve Devah Shanti Brahma Shanti Hi Sarvagum Shanti Reva Shanti Hi Sama Shanti Redhi Jato Yata Samihase Tato No Abhayankuru Sannaha Guru Prajabhyo Bhayannaha Pasubhyaha Viswani Deva Savitar Duritani Parasuva Jadbadrantanna Asuva Om Shanti 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 Shushantir Bhavatu Sarvarishta Shantir Bhavatu. O Lord, may the skies give us peace. May space bring peace. May the earth give us peace. May the waters give peace. May herbs and plants give us peace. May all of the beings of the earth bring the peace. May the deities bestow peace. May all of creation bring us peace. Peace, peace and peace. May peace prevail throughout the universe. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Griggs, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Thank you. cutting there, and it's really exciting for the community. It shows us how we can take a great park, a state-of-the-art architectural pavilion, and do a large gray park that's fabulous. And then this morning, Councilman Cadena and I did the ribbon cutting for the new Walmart at Gilman and Northwest Highway. Will be open as they project this, will open as one of their top stores in the nation, and hopefully we'll keep it there, employing 300 people in the neighborhood, and is the first of seven stores they plan for Dallas, three of them being in southern Dallas, and I think it's an important cornerstone and a marker for the life of this city. You know, there's a lot of cities in the United States that are saying, woe is up, times are tough. People are coming to Dallas and wanting to spend money. And I think that says a lot about our citizens, a lot about our community, and the vibrancy of this economy. So thank you, Councilman Jane, for your leadership through that project. Lastly, I think we're about halfway through or getting there with our town hall meetings. I ask all citizens that haven't gone to one to sign up for one. You don't have to go just in your district. You can go to any of them. And this is a very important part of the civic role that we all play. And I want to thank the staff that spent many of their nights answering questions and the great leadership of the council. I say it's best practice is Ms. Hill, who runs that meeting with an iron fist, and I love it. So thank you for your leadership and taking probably a three-hour meeting and getting it down to 2 hours. So thank you. With those opening comments, I'd like to start our recognition this morning.
Oh, Mayor?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Am I making an announcement about my back-to-school health fair?
Please.
Thank you. This Saturday, I'll be hosting a back-to-school health fair at Southampton Hospital at 2929 Southampton. We're going to have food and music, and it's going to be at Southampton Hospital, and we'll be giving out immunizations to DISD students or other students to get them ready. We all know that school starts this Monday in DISD. I also just want to thank my colleague, Councilmember Chanel Atkins, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins, for his help in organizing this. It's going to be a great event from 8 a.m. till noon this Saturday, so please come on out and get your immunizations up to date. Thank you.
Great. Anything else like that? Okay. I think it's good to get those announcements out. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins and Councilwoman Coop. Okay, and Jerry Allen. I'm sorry, I've got the wrong name here. Mr. Allen. Oh, and Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, as some of you might know, that we've been working on this trail in North Dallas called the Cottonwood Trail for about 12 years now. And it started out as just a little seed, and it goes underneath the High Five, and it connects to the White Rock Trail. And it goes through Hamilton Park, which is a terrific historic black neighborhood, and pops up, that's in Jerry's district, pops up underneath, after it goes under the High Five, pops up in my district at the Spring Valley and Coit area. Well, recently we made the connection to the White Rock Trail. It was a great day. Some of you were able to come. Ms. Margolin was able to come, and it was really a terrific day. As a matter of fact, come on up here, Ann, because she's part of the group as well. But we wanted to honor today TI for their service. So I'm going to call up these people, plus a very special guest. Gray Mays is the Director of Public Affairs. Is Gray here? Hi, Gray. Come on up. Ezra Pinnerman. I saw Ezra. Come on up, Ezra. The Director of Community Relations. Liz Moyer. Well, Liz is a past TI employee, and I think most of us know her. She works for the Community Foundation now. And I'm not sure if Gail Chandler was able to make it today. She wasn't able to make it. Tara Dooley. No, Tara didn't make it. Okay. And our very special guest, former mayor and former council member as well, Mary Foss. Mary, would you come up and join us? Mary's been kind of the guardian angel of the trail. We have a recognition that we're going to read for TI, but for Jerry and I, and I'll let Jerry make some remarks here. For Jerry and I, TI not only has helped us all along this process, and you see a picture here of us doing the ribbon cutting for the trail, but they have also helped us with our school kids. I have a very challenging area in Spring Valley and Coit. They send out their, every year, they send out a group to help us clean up the park there, and the park really needs it, and it's in such great shape now. You really wouldn't have recognized it when y'all started from where it came to where it is now, so we so appreciate that every year that people from all over the North Texas area for TI come out and do that for us. We appreciate that. They do science classes, hands-on science classes during the summer sometimes for our camps. They have really done a lot for our community and our school kids, our Richardson school kids in that area. Of course, their location is right there as well, and I know they've done a lot in Jerry's district too. This special project has been going along so long that it's almost hard to remember from where it started. They've helped us with this project, and they have never wavered in that commitment to help connect the trails together. And Mary has made sure that no one has ever wavered in their commitment as the guardian angel of the trail. It's been a lot of work for Mary. It's been a lot of work for TI, and your employees are just very special, very, very special. I really mean that, and I don't know if you saw the little video that we did on the Cottonwood Park the day of the cleanup, but it was very nice, and they just came out because they wanted to help the community, and that type of community spirit from a industry, huge industry, I think you're the biggest, or if not the biggest, the second biggest in Dallas, is just greatly appreciated. We're going to read this, but I want my colleagues to make some comments first.
I'll start off, Mary. You've been the driving force behind this, and the best part about it, you can see the fruits of your labor. That's the best part. You can see it today, you can see it tomorrow, you can see it a year from now. Councilwoman Margolin, after we went out and did the grand opening right there, as part of right there close to where we were at, and Councilwoman Margolin went out and with her husband and even walked it and told me again how beautiful it was. So I got out there and did the same thing. And it's absolutely, absolutely beautiful. Texas Instruments, besides being one of the top five taxpayers in the city of Dallas, you guys are incredible. Y'all get it. Y'all understand about what it's like to be a good corporate citizen. Our kids, what you do over and over again for our kids, the educational component that y'all do over and over and over again, the work you do with, I use the words people with special abilities, and the work y'all do with people with special abilities, my hat's off to you. In summary, right here where we're at a guard station that's right at Forest Lane and Central Expressway. In probably a mile, 2 mile radius, there's around 70,000 people. And what it hit me as we were doing this is right there at that dart, a lot of our kids, our young adults, they do not have anything to do. But because that station is right there and the start of this Cottonwood Trail is right there, there's a dart and being accessible to that gives our kids the ability to get on a dart bus and come right here. So, again, I can't say enough about TI and what y'all have done. So now I bet you can add to that.
I sure can, Jerry. Thank you also. But, Mary, thank you. Proud of you, Mary, you know, to bring this to my attention, also TI, you know. One great thing is public-private partnership, and Mary, with your help with TI and the public-private partnership that you're doing is a great thing. But also, my colleague, Bonsir Jones Hills, you know, we have a trail in southern Dallas now. You know, we have a southern sector that Meredith recoined the phrase for southern Dallas. We are doing the trail, and that's why I was very, very passionate about the trail in Limacoon and Jerry Allen. Kind of jealous, but we're getting there. So, but the key is, Mary Pons TI is public-private partnership, but also the citizens of Dallas working together with the city and with our private sector. That's what makes a difference. We need to learn from this trail throughout the city of Dallas that all our trails will connect sooner or later. You know, we had trails, it's in southern Dallas, it's going to connect to the east, the west, the white, the north, all at once. So, Mary, thanks for your vision. Also, Mary, Linda Coop, thank you, and Jerry Allen, thank you for letting me be part of the presentation.
Thank you.
echoing all of the thanks that have been given, especially Mary, for carrying the torch for so long, but also recognizing that this is a great example of intergovernmental partnership, because DART was involved, the county was involved, and the city. And so all three of these entities provided funding and energy to make this happen, and I think that's important to remember as well. So thank you to everybody.
So we'll do the whereases and kind of divide that up here, but we've made the big print. You know, I have to have it really big print. Okay, that's a helpful thing. Okay, whereas the Cottonwood Creek Trail is approximately 3 miles long, extending from Spring Valley Road to the White Rock Creek Trail, and whereas the Cottonwood Creek Trail provides safe, uninterrupted bicycle and pedestrian access through the congested Hi-Fi interchange, and whereas the Cottonwood Creek Trail provides a direct connection to the DART Area Rapid Transit Forest Lane Station and is the first connection of this type to light rail, and whereas the Cottonwood Creek Trail links the Preston Ridge Trail and the White Rock Trail, providing connectors to Richardson, Far North Dallas, and Plano.
As far as the Cottonwood Trail completes the third segment of what will become the five-segment of trail intersection in the low five, and whereas the Cottonwood Creek Trail completes the missing link needed to connect 35 continuous miles of trail from Dallas, downtown Dallas, to Plano. Whereas Texas Instruments provide the vision, the leadership, sustainable funding to help make the construction of the Cottonwood Trail missing link a reality. Whereas many thousands of people in the Metroplex will enjoy these trails for years to come. And whereas people utilize these trails will have many sustainable benefits, including exercising, recreation, and relaxation. And whereas the city of Dallas and all of its employees wish to wholeheartedly thank Texas Instruments and all of its employees for their leadership, generosity, and vision of these trails. And whereas this trail connect is a gift to all of the citizens in the region. Now, therefore, we, Chanel Ack and Lynn LeCoultre, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council and Mayor Mike Robbins, do hereby extend a special recognition to Texas Instruments on this 17th day of August.
Well, thank you. This is a great honor, and honestly, it was the team at TI. Liz Moyer was really a driving force, so bringing Mary Potts in just really literally made this thing happen. So she just doesn't stop and she doesn't give up. So it's really a wonderful project, and it's a great way to connect with the neighborhood, and honestly, this is part of a legacy that has been with TI since its founders established it. So anyway, thank you.
Mary, you want to say something?
Well, thank you all very much for all the nice, kind words. It's especially great to see everyone. This is really a day to recognize Texas Instruments. I didn't plan on standing up here. They had the vision, they provided the leadership, and they provided the seed money to really make this project come about. I know that Councilman Condane is working on some pieces of the trails, the Katy extension at the Mockingbird Station. Once those are finished, they are funded. With this connection that was just completed under TI's leadership, we will have 35 contiguous miles of trail all the way from downtown Dallas to Plano. So thank you all, the Park Department, Willis Winters, Paul Dyer, Michael Hellman, everyone who was a part of this. It was a team effort, a very collaborative effort, and we're all a part of this big success. Thank you all.
Thank you. Well, you do it. Well, you want to do it?
everybody's taking their seat, I'd like to thank Texas Instruments personally, and to put a finer point on what Councilman Allen said, they're not only the top five taxpayers, they are the number one taxpayer in the city of Dallas. They're the number one water user in Dallas, and they lead in conservation in that regard as well. So it was one of my great privileges when I became mayor to call CEO Rich Templeton up, thank him for his partnership. And you got to realize they're a good example of what Dallas is all about. They are a worldwide company, talking to China all the time about how they can do business, and then at the same time take care of their backyard and with just down the street. And so I think we are so fortunate from an asset standpoint to have Texas Instruments with us. And please give my regards to Rich. Thank you. Ms. Coop. I'm sorry, Ms. Hostel. I thought you were a star.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. And I'm here this morning to give special recognition to Texas Can Academy. They are celebrating their 35th anniversary in Dallas and other parts of the state. They are also continuing to provide not only second chances to our young people who have somehow strayed from getting their high school diplomas, so they continue to do that, but they are quickly becoming a school of choice. Texas Can Academy has a great model that helps people go to school and get their high school diploma, as well as being able to work if, in fact, they have to provide resources for their families. So I would like to ask Grant East, the founder of Texas Can Academy, to come up. Lee Alvarez, Lou Blackburn, Malcolm Wentworth, if you guys will come on up. Richard Vodkis, Robin Hutchinson, Ruben De Leon, Stan Armstrong, Teresa Lee, Yolanda Cruz, Kirk Beckert, and Sandaria Smith. You guys will come on up. You are looking at the administrators and some of the board members for Texas Can Academy. And so I can tell you these folks work day to day to make sure that those kids who have fallen through the cracks and not gotten their high school diplomas make sure that they get them, and that Dallas's high school rate for graduation increases by the work that they do. So I am going to read their, and we're just very proud of them. It's kind of an unsung hero in the city, and in other cities as well. We're in Texas Can is in San Antonio, Austin, Fort Worth, Houston, and Dallas. So let me read this, and I'm going to ask Richard to come accept this. A Texas Can Academy provides at-risk youth with a compassionate, positive, and nurturing learning environment, steering them and their families to achieve economic independence. Texas Can Academy gives hope for a better life through relationship-based education and training, providing a non-threatening environment where all students receive focused attention and work toward earning their high school diploma. Since its beginning in 1985, 10 campuses have been established throughout the state of Texas, including three in the city of Dallas. Each year, approximately 6,000 students are enrolled at the 10 campuses, and since 1985, over 70,000 students have benefited from the services of Texas Can Academy. Students graduating from these schools go on to further their education and skills, with 78% of the students pursuing post-secondary education and 5% of the students joining the U.S. military. Therefore, I, Delia Hasso, council member, and on behalf of the mayor and the Dallas City Council, give special recognition to Texas Can Academy for celebrating your 35th anniversary and continuing to provide second chances for thousands of at-risk students, and also becoming a school of choice. I think we have a video, Benny. Where is Benny? Video. Cue.
The Texas Association of Business is a state business association whose mission is to create the best business climate on the planet so that when businesses make a decision about where to expand or where to relocate to, the answer will be Texas. We know it's absolutely essential that kids graduate from high school. The dropouts are going to be a drag on society for the rest of their lives. So the minimum that they need to do is to get them into and out of high school with a diploma so they can move on to employment or further education.
I'm so pleased to see that the Texas Association of Business is honoring an educator this year with the Distinguished Service Award. And Richard Marquez of the Texas Can Academy is just that kind of a leader.
Dallas Can has a very unique mission that reaches out to children who are unable to succeed in the traditional system and provide something for them they don't get in a normal traditional setting, a tremendous amount of interaction with adults and the building of relationships that they desperately need.
Like a line graph as opposed to the bar graph.
They need this personal interaction. They have a poor self-image. They failed everywhere else. So they come here, they need someone who continues to say to them that they're worth something. They're a value. So we have one teacher for every 15 students. We have one adult in our schools for every 6 to 7 children. There's this constant human interaction around the whole idea of academics.
When I got here, I just loved the environment and how the classes are small. You get to make a relationship with your teacher.
I can really feel they care about our teacher and what we can do because they see the potential in us.
Before I came to Dallas Can, I didn't care about going to school. I used to skip school a lot. I didn't really care because school didn't mean nothing to me until I came here. It just made me feel like I'm going to do something.
We do not make them come here. They come because they want to come. The only way we can keep them here is by providing the best that we can possibly provide for them.
The purchase floor sale from Europe to North and South.
We're a charter school. We're a free public Texas high school, and anyone can come to us. Anyone between the age of 14 and 21.
We're an accelerated program. And a traditional high school, it takes 3 to 6 weeks to consider a semester with their earned credit. Here they earn credit every 9 to 10 weeks.
We have some 14-year-olds who came directly from middle school who graduated when they were 16. And that's why you don't give up on the potential for these kids, because you never know what they're going to do.
My institution is dumb. She helped me put my life together, but she don't know this, but she taught me that we learn history, so we could like not let the things that went on in the past happen in the future. So that's what I did, like my brothers. They didn't finish school, they didn't do nothing with their lives, so I wanted to break that cycle and create my own path so I could have better benefits in my life.
We've all used up our second chances in one way, shape, or another, and some of them have used up 3, 4, 5. So these children deserve the same options. I'm a high school dropout. Nobody gave up on me. When 656 students quit Texas schools every day, you're losing a tremendous amount of intellectual ability, plus workers in the workforce.
This is not acceptable, and it's pointing us towards a disaster in the future of Texas. We need to get them back in school, and we need to give them the skills so that we can compete globally in the future of Texas, and so they'll be taxpayers and not tax eaters.
The issue for us, obviously, is to find those institutions, those schools that can graduate students who might otherwise be dropouts and end up with job skills that they can take with them into the workplace.
This is our entire world happening right before our eyes. A single generation, if educated correctly, with good values, can change our environment in a matter of one generation. Every one of these kids will make a difference in the world. Every one of them. And there's so many more out there that need help.
This is a great school, and I'm not just saying that. This is a great school, because if you need a second chance, that is 10. This is the school to go to.
Thank you, Dallas Can Academy.
Thank you, Mr. Marquez.
Thanks, Dallas Can Academy. Appreciate it. For real.
All right. Well, as you can see, you know, Richard got a huge award with the Texas Association of Businesses recognizing him as a superior educator. So I wanted you to hear this story. It is a huge effort that is being done right here in Dallas and in some of our other cities in Texas. But for Dallas, it means that we increase our graduation rate. So, Richard, come on up.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, schools like ours usually are looked upon as places where the children who have fallen off of the mainstream just go to get some type of education whatsoever. We don't believe in that. We are the leader in education in this state, and we intend to be the leader in educating humans in this country. We are the best run nonprofit anywhere in this state. While everybody cut their education spending this year, we did not cut a penny. As a matter of fact, we've added to what we're doing in our schools. In Pleasant Grove, we're opening up a new school next year. Not Pleasant Grove, we opened up a school in Pleasant Grove, which is, by the way, one of the finest education facilities you'd ever want to see. We're opening up in Wilmer Hutchins next year. We're going back to Wilmer Hutchins. The DISD took the building away from us to rebuild the school, and we left behind a large number of students. Well, we're going to go back to them. In the city of Dallas alone, we graduated over 600 students. The Oak Cliff campus by itself graduated as many kids as any 5A high school in the city of Dallas, over 350 students. Their average enrollment is 644. Our entire curriculum is based on a very unique way of educating humans. It's so unique, it's almost too ridiculous. You see, what we do is we teach them how to read, we teach them how to write, and we teach them how to think. Isn't that amazing? That the very basics for what education is all about will actually make you successful in the world and is now considered unique. We are on a quest this coming year to develop solutions for children who have dyslexia and other issues in high school. No high school anywhere in this country is attempting to do such a thing. I love charter schools. I love them because they allow you to be creative, they allow you to make solutions, and they allow you to react instantly when someone has a problem. So, something's happening right here under your very nose. You need to come look. You need to come see. And you need to come experience the same thing the children are experiencing. Because I'm telling you today that if you have a child and you want to give them the best education possible anywhere, send them to the CAN Academy. They'll interact with children from all walks of life, but let me tell you something, they'll be much better for it. Thank you very much.
I didn't tell you Richard's background. He was a superintendent for a long time with DISD. What was your Washington connection?
I was the advisor to the United States Secretary on the issue of dropout prevention.
Oh.
But let me give you one little quick fact. We paid cash for that building in Pleasant Grove.
Yeah. That building, I think, was a Walmart. Well, no, it was in Albertsons. But yeah, I encourage you guys anytime. We'll see if we can arrange a tour so you can go see that gorgeous building and what they did with a closed down Albertsons, turned it into a Texas CAN Academy so we could graduate more people. Grant, do you want to say a couple words and then I'll let y'all go?
I want to say one of the superstars here also is the chairman of our Board of Trustees who hasn't taken a bow. But let's give her a bow because this is the chairman of the Board of Trustees. And, you know, she can be a little particular. So you know that Richard is being supervised very well with duty as the chairman of the board. Now, I've given Young Texans a second chance. It's been our motto for so long. It's, you know, I got more out of it than I put in it. And I still am. And I'm delightfully enjoying retirement, living in Councilman Griggs' district. And just amazing to see what kind of it's amazing to see what these kids will accomplish. If you just give them a hug, give them some decent basic educational skills, and tell them they can do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Grant. Who else we have? Dr. Lou Blackburn has been with Texas CAN for how many years, Lou? Come on up.
5 years, and he is our CFO. So if you'll come on up and say a couple of words, and then Robin, and then we'll be done. No Robin. Okay.
Yeah, but if they can, I tend to take a back seat. But some of you know that I've been in education for quite a bit. The mayor talked about Wilma Hutchins a little while ago, and I was there on Saturday. I appreciate him being there. I used to work for Wilma Hutchins, and the district closed down in 2005, and that's when I came on to work with the CAN and started out as HR, and then for some reason Richard moved me over to finance when he got there. So when Richard moved me there, he didn't tell me, but I got the impression that he wanted me to make sure that the money was safe based on my experiences at Wilma Hutchins and maybe a few other places. But when he talked about us then, it's about that one building, paying for it in cash, paying for the renovations in cash. He did not say that we also bought a building in Houston, paid for it with cash, renovated with cash. And I'm not telling him right now that we still have cash in the bank. But I appreciate the opportunity to work with the students and the staff at Texas Can Academy. And Dilly, I appreciate your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, guys. We're going to do some pictures, and we're done. Thank you.
A couple of people want to say a few things while you take pictures. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins.
Thank you. But also, Della, thank you for your leadership. But last year, as you know, when Texas Can came to the city of Dallas, you colleagues, y'all helped to make sure this become a reality. We took a community that was kind of said, do you bring a great education institution into the community? And they debated over and over. And we found out that Texas Can is a number one first-class educator there. Again, Devil House did mention that it was an old abandoned building, but we also would really appreciate that you took that building off of the abandoned and became the reality to teach education, especially in Cashford. Also, in Pleasant Grove, you know, we always said that Pleasant Grove is something, is always been a stepchild to the city of Dallas. As you see now, it's no longer a stepchild, it's an education. So once you got an education, you become more knowledgeable of the world and do better things in the community. Again, thank Texas Can, and also Delta Hospital and the entire Texas Can Academy for what you're doing for the city of Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me say, in working with the kids, I think it has been proven where my passion is, and dealing with children that have concerns. I call them children with concerns. When you give a kid a second chance, because we've all been there once before, we still and probably have a few brats that are sitting even around the horseshoe that are now representing the city of Dallas. I'm one of the brats. So let me put myself first. But when you expect for a kid to make an error, and don't expect for children to all take every step the correct way, they all and we all went through childhood. And because a kid makes a mistake or a bad decision does not mean that they should be kept away from opportunity. I recognize and appreciate the opportunity that Texas Can and Dallas Can that you all provide to children. When you look at the video that we witnessed and you see the testimony of the fact, had not been for you, then where would they be today? And what would their lives be tomorrow moving forward? So I want to say to each and every one of you, and Delia, the entire board, the superintendent, and especially the founder, and all that work with a dedicated heart for these children, thank you, and thank you, and thank you.
Ms. Medrano, thank you. Mr. Caraway.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And we appreciate everything that that you do for the kids. Ms. Hossel, thank you very much for recognizing Texas Can. You know, your dedication is tremendous. I know there's a Texas Can Academy in District 2, and when I needed your help, Mr. Marcus, you just jumped on it the next day, so I really appreciate it. Please give the students a very high five for, you know, continuing the education, because at some point they know that they need to go back, but, you know, it's not a traditional school. You know, you really work with their schedule. Some people because they're helping out the family, some people because they need babysitters, some for whatever reason, you work with their schedule, and I think that's excellent. And congratulations on your Pleasant Grove campus. I have one question for you. Do you follow with your students after they graduate as to where they go next, or they continue college? Is there some type of tracking mechanism for Texas Camp? I was just curious.
We're the only high school in America that has a career foundation program that is accredited by the
Marquez, thank you for what all of your system is doing. The bottom line is graduating kids. And I've worked ever since I've been here with our schools to try to make sure we get our children graduated. That's something that Dallas needs big time, is to get a system where we can make our schools better and graduate kids. That's what's going to draw the economy, the quality of life, everything in this city. And I would love to see your curriculum and your ideas promoted in DISD somehow. And if we could do that, I think we'd be a better system for that. So thank you so much for what you're doing there. And hopefully we can come along and help us get ours done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Cadet. Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I want to say kudos to you and your staff and the Board of Directors for Dallas Cayon. I do have a family member who went to Dallas Cayon. But I also support public school as well. It's amazing that we have a high dropout rate, and something is happening in our school system. And we have to ask the question at the end of the day, why do we have so many kids dropping out of public schools? Why do we have so many kids dropping out of public schools?
The
We're gonna have to do something about that, because I came out of public schools, and half of us in here perhaps came out of public schools, and so I went to a graduation from another charter school of a friend of mine's daughter that was graduating. They had over 5,000 kids who graduated that just dropped out of public schools. Those are a lot of kids, and I know that Dallas Cayon and Texas Cayon can resolve all the issues, but you're trying, and so that's all that you can do at the end of the day is try. And that's like, girl, we have to do something. We're gonna have to address this issue with our dropout rate. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Obviously, a lot of people like you. And thank you, Ms. Marcus, for your leadership, and Ms. Hosto, your leadership as well on this. I will say one other thing, and thank you for letting Dr. Blackburn lead as president of the DISD School Board of Trustees. trustees. He's been a friend through this last couple of months as we try to chart the direction for Dallas Independent School District. And I'll tell you, a lot of what he does at Texas CAN is rubbing off. And thank you, Dr. Blackburn, for your leadership. You're classy and you get things done. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Otto. Ms. Caraway, you got some ice cream over there for us? Don't be bringing food unless you share.
Oh, here we go.
Is this our healthy?
Do I have my is it on my lips and everything? I'm looking good. Well, let me try to get through this. Gaither, I don't think I should enjoy this Nestle ice cream by myself. I'm kind of do this on tradition because I'm going to eat this ice cream when I'm here. Now, how about this? See, you can't recognize Nestle without having Nestle doing the recognition, all right? All right, okay. Isn't good stuff. Mayor and Council, throughout the United States, the entire month of July is recognized as National Ice Cream Month. Now, of course, we, the Dallas City Council, we're on vacation during the month of July. And it was a well-deserved vacation because it was over 100 degrees the entire month. But when you have a product like Nestle, who cares about the heat? Each day we want to thank Nestle, and we do want to thank you for all that you all do. And we want to thank you today for these treats to our Dallas City Council members. And let me make sure the council understands that, hey, I'm still up here eating it as well. Don't worry about the calories today. We're not going to count calories today. It's time to just celebrate. So all the counts are off. So just enjoy it. We have plenty more to have. A little bit about Nestle. Nestle was founded in 1866 by Henry Nestle in Switzerland, and ever since has been a leader in health and nutrition. And whereas Nestle has become one of the largest and most successful producers in the world with strong belief in expanding globally, all while giving back locally. Every time we've called on Nestle, Nestle has been there for us, and we want to recognize Nestle today, once again demonstrating its dedication to the city of Dallas through its donations of ice cream in honor of National Ice Cream Month this past July. Nestle's understanding of their corporate social responsibility exemplifies a high level of business integrity and is manifested through the positive relationship with consumers and the city of Dallas greatly. As I stand here with my Nestle as proof, we greatly appreciate all that Nestle has done for our city, its employees, and the continued dedication to serving our community. Now, therefore, I, Mike S. Rollins, Mayor of the City of Dallas, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby, on this 17th day of August 2011, extend special recognition to the number one corporate ice cream sponsor to the City of Dallas. Mr. Johnson, presenting this on behalf of the city of Dallas. Thank you so very much.
Mayor Rawlings, Council Carraway.
Come on, Mayor.
Members of the Dallas City Council and members of the city of Dallas, on behalf of Nestle, I am privileged to receive this award. You know, it's been a little warm outside this summer, so I hope you enjoy your cool treats. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
Now,
anybody that brings food is a friend of...
Hold on. Let's get this picture right.
You think he's a promoter or what? Mr. Cadet?
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, I've got to thank you for what Nestle did for our Northeast Safety Fair out at our police station out at Northeast Safety Fair just here a while back. Y'all furnished the ice cream there, and I want to tell you how much that was appreciated. And I know you do this all over the city, and you all are work with the neighborhoods, the communities, everywhere, and you make our quality of life a lot better. So thank you so much for what you did for us there. It was a pleasure, and it was fantastic.
Thank you. It was a privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Mr. Allen, I think you have a proclamation.
All right. Ms. Morgullis?
And while we're Ms. Morgullin and Councilwoman Morgullin's coming up, if I can get all my fine people from Gorba, if they'd come up at this time. And I don't know if Lee Kleinman's, I don't know if he's here or not, but is Lee out there? There he is. I didn't see you behind there, buddy. I tell you, we've had a good morning, hadn't we? You know, we started off number one taxpayer in the city of Dallas, doing nice things with our parks department. Come back with Texas Can, doing all the great things with those kids that are out there. Next thing you know, we're eating ice cream. I tell you, not a bad deal. And this has been a good morning so far. It's been a good morning. And what I'm getting ready to do, we're going to talk about DORBA. Can I see a show of hands of my council members that know what DORBA is? All right, well, there you go.
Better than we thought.
There you go. Well, quite frankly, a couple of months ago, I did not know. I had no clue about DORBA, Dallas Off-Road Bicycle Association. I had no clue. But we were, Councilwoman Morgullin and I, we were invited to a ribbon cutting at Greenville Avenue and Walnut Hill area, putting in a new 5.4-mile trail. And so I had no clue at that point in time who they were. And it was so neat. We got out there. Lee was there leading the way as always because this is his passion. And what I found out was that I got a group of folks out there, been doing this for a long time, where they go out there and they take trails and all of a sudden they turn them into off-road bicycles, also cross-country, walkers, whatever you want. And they're doing it on their own free time. They're doing it on their own free time. And that's pretty neat when you're doing something to benefit another person's life without any benefit for your own. The trail system was just, as we walked back out in the back, I didn't bring my bicycle with me or as somebody asked me, my spandex pants and stuff. Yeah, but I walked out there and the birds were chirping. It was incredible. One thing that it really hit me on this too, and a couple of weeks earlier, we'd been out at the Cottonwood, and we'd opened it up. And I mentioned about DART and how we had DART station right there. And that got me thinking about, y'all heard me talk about my kids and my multifamilies and not anything to do. And how do you get them to the trail system and stuff? And so I was looking at DART, trying to figure out how to do DART. Through DORBA, y'all introduced me to the outfit called Spokes for Folks, which basically gives bicycles to people. So I was already dreaming up the ideal about how we can put bicycles out in my multifamily communities, and then they can put them on the DART buses because we've got that, and then we can get them back and forth that way. Start doing bicycle clubs at the multifamily complexes. And then it kind of hit me that, well, it's going to cost my kids money to ride DART. So eventually, with Mary's help, we're going to get a hopper bus. We're going to do a hopper bus all through my community, and we'll connect the trails. We'll connect the recreation centers. We'll connect the libraries. We'll connect the frisbee parks. And we'll just do a hopper bus. And that way, I don't have my recreation centers, my access. But what I will have is I'll bring them to them, is what we're going to do. And so, anyway, within a two-mile radius, of Harry Moss Park, and that's where y'all put this in, within a two-mile radius, there's 91,527 people. 91,527 people live in a two-mile radius of where y'all put that, what's right now 5.4 miles. You're going to expand it and make it even better. But over 91,000 people. Scott, they've got right over there in your neck of the woods, Oak Cliff Nature Preserve, did the same thing. You've got 8 miles. And within a two-mile radius, you got 74,000 people. 74,000 people having access to something because of what y'all have done. 74,000 people. And I can't think of a better sport for our young kids to get in and get involved in with off-road bicycling like that. That's a clean sport. Councilwoman Hill over at Boulder Park, you got 11 miles over there. Absolutely, it's right there, I-20 and 67. Then it's so close. There you go. And the list goes on and on and on. And so I could literally talk for a long time about I could, and I'm doing it. I am getting here. I'm going to step aside.
Like Jerry, I had no idea that Jorba existed until we went to this ribbon cutting. And what's amazing to me is that it's not just that they're building a trail where there's a trail. They are going into dense forest and carving out a trail. And when we build a paved trail, it costs the city about $1 million a mile. When they build a trail, it costs the city nothing, and they continue to maintain it. Now, it's not a paved trail. It's a dirt trail. It's a bike trail. But they come back week after week, month after month, and continue to maintain these trails. So this is the gift that this is to the city is unbelievable. And the fact that I hadn't known about it, and perhaps some of you didn't know about it until now, I think it's really critical that we extend recognition and appreciation to this amazing group.
So,
sure, the proclamation. Whereas the Dallas Off-Road Bicycle Association, DORBA, a nonprofit organization, was founded in 1988 by a small group of off-road enthusiasts who wanted to promote interest in, enjoyment of, and fellowship associated with mountain biking with others in the community. Whereas in 1991, the Dallas Off-Road Bicycle Association joined the City of Dallas Park and Recreation Department to develop the LB Houston Hike and Bike Trail. And whereas DORBA has continued monthly trail maintenance and trail construction at Dallas Parks, LB Houston, Boulder, Harry Moss, and organized the first annual DFW Mountain Bike Championship Series utilizing local trails, all built and maintained by DORBA.
And whereas the Dallas Off-Road Bicycle Association works on a volunteer basis for trail upkeep, trail building, and maintenance projects on 22 trails spanning 7 North Texas counties with over 200 miles of trails. 200 miles times $1 million. 200 miles times $1 million of trails used by mountain bikers, trail running clubs, hikers, public high school cross-country competitive events, and private promoters of triathlon events. In 2010, they had a record-breaking 9,212 volunteer hours. If I had a hat, I'd take it off to you. Whereas the Dallas Off-Road Bicycle Association held its 15th Dallas-Fort Worth Championship Series and set a new DFW Series attendance record with 1,107 races for the three races. And whereas, and I hope some of my folks that live out in my multifamily will be the winners of that one of these days, I guarantee you. I like your attitude. Whereas the Dallas Off-Road Bicycle Association has been recognized in national publications as an example of successful working relationships with landowners to provide support of preserving opportunities that outdoor recreation, culture and natural resource experiences for the social, economic, and environmental benefit of the citizens of North Texas, and we're just about finished. Whereas, the Dallas Off-Road Association has become a tremendous asset. 200 miles times $1 million. There you go. $200 million. $200 million. It's a tremendous asset to the citizens of Dallas and the Dallas Parks and Recreation Centers. Their commitment to the parks and trails has saved the Dallas taxpayers money, and in this time of economic crisis, we are proud of all the work they do. Whereas now, therefore, I, Mike Rollins, Mayor of the City of Dallas, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim Wednesday, August 17, 2011, the Dallas Off-Road Bicycle Association Day in Dallas, Texas. Congratulations. How about this? He's on the board of directors and one of the leaders that goes along.
I can't thank you guys enough for this. Mike Kellerman and Lee Kleinman have been a big help over the last several years. Like I said, we've been doing it for 21 years. We've got a race this Sunday out at LB Houston Park. Come out Sunday all day long and see it. We hosted the Firefighter Olympics this last year at Boulder Park. You know, we do so much. But we do it, he said we don't get a benefit. I lost 100 pounds riding mountain bike, so I think I got a pretty good benefit out of it. The other board member we have here, Howard the Trail Steward, he took that forest that was Harry Moss Trail and we converted into a trail. If you haven't been down there, you'd be amazed how much country we have in this city. We mentioned the three trails in city parks. We've also got one at Oak Cliff Nature Preserve, which is actually a Texas Land Conservatory. It's not a city park, but it's open to the public to come use. We have a church in South Dallas that opened up their 300 acres to us. We've now got, I think, 15 miles in there going on 30. You'd be amazed at how far off the path you can get from a concrete trail coming to one of our trails. And we offer you come walk your dogs, come bring your children, come out and enjoy the trails. It's amazing. And volunteer and become a member. We're at 1489, I think, this morning, members. We're trying the 1500 member gets it. Some swag. So, if you all join today, we'll make that $15,000, and we really need it. Like I said, we're a nonprofit, and we appreciate you guys' help and cooperation with us.
Lee, would you like to say something?
Thank you very much. Just so people are clear, in Dallas, we don't have mountains, so this is mountain biking, but it's called off-road biking in Dallas, and there are hundreds of miles of trails. Within North Texas that this organization maintains. I'm very proud to be associated with them and support them and help them. Also, and a member. But nevertheless, this is a wonderful private-public partnership where the city is greatly benefiting and the Parks Department is actually expanding our access to the parks through DORBA. So I'm very proud to be part of that. I also do want to recognize our city staff, Michael Hellman, John Jenkins, Dave Strieber and their staff all did tremendously embrace DORBA and have helped them be so successful in the system. It's really been terrific, and I want to thank the staff for that. Thank you.
All right. And you have any final remarks? I mentioned there's 5 off-road parks that I just looked at real quick. I mean, I just did them real quick here in Dallas, and when we did that, there's 41 miles and of what you've done. And I was out there when we were out there and you were out there in your clothes and you were out there just continuing to clean that track up in that area. And my hat goes back off to you because you're out there doing stuff from, in our case, our community and our kids that are out there and putting smiles on their faces. And I can't thank you enough for this. But one last point. Within where we're at, within there's 226,956 people that live within a 2 mile radius of these trails that y'all have done. That's just in Dallas. That's just Dallas. So one out of six folks here in Dallas live within a 2 mile radius to take advantage of what y'all have done. Hats off to you again. Can't say enough. Let's get some pictures. What do you say?
All right. Thank you.
Did you want to say anything?
All right. Come on here.
Thank you. Some numbers quickly. In the month of July, Paul and I began to do a trail count in 5 of our trails. And we can say that In one day, there's between 350 to 400 people using the trails just in Dallas, just these five. In one day, this is runners, hikers, and of course cyclists. And they vary in range from 5:30 in the morning till around 10:30 in all the trail counts. And it does help that President Bush rides our trails. And he's been very, very generous to the club by giving some money for the specific needs of simply buying tools. And that is our biggest expense, the tools to maintain the trails. Our website gets about 8,000 unique visits per day. And we have members not only in the U.S., but we also people get sending money from Mexico, Germany, basically four continents. People that have lived in Dallas but have relocated, and they still send in their $25 a year because they still want to support the club. So I just want to say thanks.
Thank y'all. Let's get
some pictures. Thank you. Well, you get some pictures. We got some comments. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Could I get Ryan Evans to come forward, please? Yes. Ryan, you know, you've been riding. You got a bike, right, Ryan?
Yes, sir.
And you ride all the trails, right?
Every one of them.
Which is the best one and the hardest one to ride?
Boulder Park.
In this race. Thank you very much, Ryan. I guess I rest my case.
I think we'd be bragging. Good time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Sorry. Hold on one second.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. I was just going to say, DORBA has been our partner on working on the Trinity Trails. It's going to be almost a 10-mile trail, allowing people to access our incredible Trinity River Basin. So we're so appreciative of your hard work on that and your partnership. So I just wanted to mention that because that's something we can look forward to starting in October. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to underline what Paul said, that this great city has so much country. And I think it's, people do not understand how much green space this city has, and we need to celebrate it. So thank you. And I'm so glad we rode our bike after we ate our ice cream.
We rode our bike in our mind.
In our mind. Is Mike Eastland here? City manager, did you...
As you are aware, Mike Eastland is the director of COG, the North Texas Central Council of Governments, for the formal name, and most of you just know it by COG, most of us do. They recognized 16 projects with their leadership awards recently, and these awards were Celebrating Leadership and Developing Excellence, the Clyde Award, their General Assembly in June, and there were 16 award winners, and three of those folks were projects of ours, and Eastland has joined us to make everybody aware of these projects and recognize these projects, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mary. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you so much for this opportunity. Congratulations to you and the other new council members, and thank you to those who are continuing on the council. We at the COD really appreciate the support, the cooperation that we've had, not only from elected officials, but from the staff. So it is a pleasure to be here. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to follow up Nestle and the free ice cream, but that only presents a challenge to us, but I'm going to tell you this is not anticlimactic. The last awards you gave and the one you gave are recognized and was the bicycling. And part of this that we're talking about today has to do with the trails you have and our work with you in some of that. But essentially, in 1999, our board and our staff recognized that we were not going to have enough dollars to outbuild with highways the tremendous growth that we're going to see over the next 20, 25 years, that air quality and highways are very closely connected, that water is an issue, that flooding and protection of our existing water through our stormwater programs are existing issues that just have to be addressed. But we also recognized that we couldn't keep doing what we've done in the past as far as development, and that we really needed to bring more opportunities for mixed use and denser development, for getting people out of cars and on the trails, walking and bicycling and those types of things. So we developed what is called the Clyde Award. And it, as Mary said, is celebrating leadership and development excellence. This year we had 40 nominations. As she said, we had 16 winners. They include Dallas City Design Studio and their urban structure and guidelines, the Better Block Project here in Dallas, and the Victory Meadows Project. I'm going to take just a brief moment to do a clip that explains the Clyde Awards just a little more in depth, and then we will do a clip on the first winner and then recognize the people who were involved in that particular project.
...2011 marks 10 years since the creation of the Center of Development Excellence and the fifth cycle of the biennial Clyde Awards program. The Center of Development Excellence was founded in 2001 to promote sustainable development throughout the North Central Texas region. The concept of a Center of Development Excellence is the idea of the Dallas and Fort Worth region being recognized globally as a center of innovation, where best practices and walkable communities are in place. To guide public and private entities in this vision, the Development Excellence Steering Committee created the Principles of Development Excellence. The Clyde Awards were created to recognize outstanding examples of development excellence and to demonstrate that the kinds of development we are striving to promote already exist in our region. To be considered for a Clyde Award, a project must exemplify one or more of the principles of development excellence. Juried by a panel of nationally recognized judges, a project must receive a unanimous vote in order to receive a Clyde Award. In the past four award cycles, 34 Clyde Award winners have demonstrated that sustainable planning and development can be done successfully while making positive contributions that help improve our region. The awardees are Dallas City Design, Urban Structure and Guidelines. Urban Structure and Guidelines strives to strike a balance between the flexibility needed to adapt to market conditions and the predictability necessary to create stability in the marketplace. The structure was crafted by collaborative dialogue with the community, and it represents a shifting perspective not only in the process and focus of the planning efforts, but also in the type of development envisioned. Award recipient is the City of Dallas City Design Studio.
Let me recognize Rob Steeds, who is one of our staff members that has been intimately involved with the Clyde program and the Center for Development Excellence, who's going to help with the distribution of this. We have several people to recognize: David Whitley, Shalonda Jackson, Mangero, Arturo Del Castillo, Brent Brown, Larry Beasley, and the interns in that department, Evan Sheets, Justin Turson, Lisa Miragard, and additionally, Mary Cook from the Trinity Trust, Gail Thomas, Melanie Ferguson, Randall White, Eva Evolve, and Frank DeLeon. If you guys would come up, and we'll be happy to give the one award, but recognize all of you and say thank you for what you've done.
The Better Block Project in Dallas. The Better Block Project is a demonstration tool that acts as a living example that communities can actively engage in the complete streets build-out process while providing real-time feedback. The first Better Block Project took place over 2 days, transforming a blighted block in Dallas into an active, viable destination that sprang to life, filling vacant storefronts and creating outdoor spaces for citizens to enjoy. Award recipients are BetterBlock.org, Go Oak Cliff, the City of Dallas, and Andrew Howard Transportation Planning.
We want to recognize those who submitted for this award. They are Jason Roberts of Go Oak Cliff, Dallas City Councilwoman Ms. Hosso, and Andrew Howard, Transportation Planning, Andrew Howard. So if you guys would come up. Pleasure of seeing this at the Greater Dallas Planning Council when you guys presented a couple of months ago, and it's just amazing to me the visual that comes from and the concept that can be realized by just a couple of days, and the fact that you created a dog park and people said, please don't take this away, and how you can move into really brings to life what can be done. And I think you give great, great examples of what we want to be tomorrow and how we can accomplish that.
Just want to say a couple of words, and I'm going to ask Jason to stay up here. Let me tell you, when they came to me, when was that, 2 years ago?
A year and a half.
Seems like two. You know, the main thing is that you've just got to keep an open mind. These, you know, the creativeness of Go Oak Cliff and the Better Block Project, Jason and Andrew, is just amazing. So when you do these little pop-up things or these temporary ways to show people what an area can look like as opposed to what it is today, you just keep an open mind. And I have to give lots of kudos to Jason and Andrew. So Jason, why not?
Thank you, Ms. Hosso. And Ms. Hosso has been a tireless supporter of the effort, and we couldn't have had nearly the success we had without her. And actually, Mr. Griggs over here, who's our new council member before he was a Better Block builder with us. So, and one thing that's really exciting for us, and we've been amazed and surprised at the attention this project has gotten and seeing it go national. And Andrew and I laughed because we read the New York Times and they talked about the Better Block Project and saying how Oak Cliff is leading the charge for this, you know, this urban planning initiatives and whatnot. You would never sit here, Oak Cliff, leading a charge and urban issues and whatnot. And so that's been really heartening, and to see all these other cities cite that as an example. So it's been amazing, and again, we're so happy to bring this to everyone and hope to do more in the future. So.
Project. Hopefully it will roll a little.
The Vickery Meadow Improvement District in Dallas. Initiated by the Vickery Meadow Improvement District, this private effort has undertaken a study of the current traffic, pedestrian, land use, social, and demographic status of the neighborhood. Urban design redevelopment concepts and street modifications were sensitively proposed in an effort to create a safer, more accessible, and walkable community that people from various socioeconomic backgrounds can thrive in. Award recipients are the Vickery Meadow Improvement District and JHP Architecture and Urban Design.
And with Brian Keith and Mark Wolf from JHP Architecture Urban Design. And all those who had a hand, that's great.
that I overlooked, Ms. Angelica Avalos and Bob Swango. So thank you, and I apologize. Let me finish up with just saying how much we appreciate this council. And I know that all of you had a hand in all of these awards because you do things as a team. And I'm sorry we couldn't recognize you individually. But what your city is doing, what you elected officials and what your staff is doing, provides great leadership for what we need to do into the future to make this region, maintain this region as a quality place, and a place that people are proud to call home and where people want to do business. On behalf of our board and Linda Coop, our chair, and all of you who are on the RTC, thank you so much for your service in enabling us to accomplish what we're able to accomplish as your staff and as a representative of you, we hope, in a very good fashion.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Ms. Toon?
Mike, I just wanted to thank you for taking time to do this. I think it's very special to be able to tell people and they've done a good job. And the interesting thing about these awards is it points out that it's not only council and staff, it's citizens and it's and businesses, and it's a huge partnership. And thank you for taking time to come over and do this.
Thank you. Thank you. I will say that I'm excited about seeing those awards, not just for the recognition, but the substance of what's been done in that area. Oak Cliff is going to be the shining vanguard in southern Dallas. I was last night at the celebration of the landmark status of Old Adamson High School, 95 years old. We're able to keep it and grow at the same time, so it's because of this sort of planning. So congratulations to the City Council and Ms. Coop.
Yeah. I do want to thank Mr. Eastland and his staff for the Clyde Award. Gave me, it's a great honor to be able to present, along with my the previous chair, Glenn Whitley, the Clyde Awards at our annual luncheon a couple of months ago, and to see our staff members there and citizens there was just really a treat for the Executive Board of COG. And to these winners, they are all terrific projects. It was just so exciting to see, you know, from a few years ago what it started out as a little seed and then see them win. So congratulations to all the winners. And next year we do this as a COG every year, and they do such a spectacular job of picking out the projects. So we've still got some projects to go that deserve awards, that's for sure. But we certainly honor those folks that have won the awards. They do get invited to the lunch, just so everybody will know. They do get invited to the annual luncheon for the COG. They are presented there as well. But to have Mike and his group come out and do that in front of our city council is very special to us. So thank you, Mike. We appreciate that.
Thank you. Ms. Madrona?
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Eastland, thank you very much for being here. And all the projects are very deserving of their awards. And Jason, you know, D Magazine predicted in January that you were hit and you were going to be you are going to continue your success in this year, and it looks like it's the prediction came true. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Number one, thank God. Thank you guys for your leadership and for this whole region. What hits me is just the grassroots effort that went into this. And, you know, Jason, I see you over and over again. Your new ideas, your concepts, it's amazing how one man can just come up with something like that start to change things. My hat's off to you because that's what you've done, and you've created this excitement. And so keep dreaming up bigger and better things for us to do. Victory Meadow Foundation, that was a grassroots effort strictly by the citizens, and they pulled it together and they said we're going to change things. That organization, the citizens came together, and so Victory Meadow area. I'm just so proud of them. So grassroots.
Alfonso.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Eastland. Thank you very much for not only awarding them, but recognizing the hard work, not only of the staff, but also the community. It is what is the award recipients were able to put this together in collaboration with participation and involvement. When you involve communities, when you involve the people in the neighborhood, that's what makes it more special, makes it more important for them, because that's what's something that they also were a part of. And I want to thank you, and I also wanted to re-recognize Ms. Eva and Mr. De Leon, that they are also very involved in the community. So thank you very much. When you involve community and involvement and participation, you get awarded. Gracias.
Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very excited about these awards because people are getting recognized for the hard work they have done. I really want to thank the Design Studio, Mary, and your staff. I had we're working on the City Crest Bridge and also MLK to try to look at long-term the design of that street. And we had a meeting at the mosque on Martin Luther King. It was just packed, and the Design Studio came out, worked with us for about a month and a half or 2 months, and to help us really think about the vision of that street and what we can do with the City Crest Bridge. And we do have a design, and they have designs that we're going to be using for the City Crest Bridge, and construction will start. And I just really want to thank the consultants. He is just he's good. He interacts with the crowd, and so I really want to thank him for that. And then with Better Blocks, I was very impressed with Daniel when Daniel did the presentation to one of our committees about the Better Blocks, and I was just blown away what Jason has done. So now he's working in some part on Spring Avenue with me with ICDC. We're going to take a street on Meadows, and we're going to redesign that street and try to get the homeowners out and to see some things on how that street can look. And so I want to thank you, Delia, for introducing this project to us. I think it's just wonderful. I like the things that think outside of the box, and these two things really think outside of the box. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Eastland. Thank you so much for coming here today and making these presentations. I think the Better Block project shows us a couple of things. One is there's such an incredible hunger for walkable communities and for fun places to go in your neighborhood. And to me, I think Jason and Andrea have just done an incredible job making this a reality here in Dallas. I mean, who would have thought that Dallas would be on the map for incredible urban development like this? So I think that's terrific. I also think it shows us that you don't have to spend tens of millions of dollars to create an exciting place, a place that people want to go to and raise their families and enjoy on the evenings and weekends. And that is really what I think Better Block shows us, because Jason and I were just talking about this. They do things on a shoestring, but they create such neat environments, and that's really what people are hungry for. So I think we can learn a lot as a city from them. So Jason, Andrew, thanks for all your work.
Thank you, Ms. Hazel.
Thank you, Mayor. And again, I'm just reiterating what everyone's saying. Obviously, I think Jason and Andrew are a great team, and certainly Scott, before he became a city council member, was out there working on Better Block also. And it does show that we can do great things without a lot of money. And I challenge us and our staff to create some new models, whereas before we want to go to design, and then that takes months, and then we want to go to construction, and that takes months. Well, Jason, the Better Block Project and Jason and Andrew have shown us that you do not have to follow an old model. You can do things quickly and very inexpensively to create the walkable and sustainable and livable areas that we need in some of our blighted areas. So I challenge the staff on that. And again, I want to thank Mr. Beasley for being here. All your great work and your great ideas are very welcome. And again, thank you, Mr. Eastland, for recognizing a great project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hudson. Mr. Griggs.
Well, thank you, Mayor. I think it was a wonderful award to the City Design Studio, and that really shows that urban design does matter. It matters not only to the City of Dallas, but it matters to the private sector as well, with a generous donation of just the City Design Studio doing. And what's so important, I think the lesson that we'll take forward from this is that entitlements, whether zoning or other financial incentives, must be tied to performance. There's a single lesson from the City Design Studio and how we move forward as a city. If we take that lesson with a lesson from Better Block, which is small changes matter, we can really begin to change the city. Although, you know, Dallas has a big D, we've got five little letters after the big D to make the word Dallas. So small changes do matter. And if we couple that with tying performance to entitlements, we'll have a great city and we can really move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs. Well, thank you very much. What a wonderful morning. You can see why people are excited about what's happening in Dallas. Excuse me. Yes. We're going to speakers and we're doing that. Speakers. Right? We're going to have, we're going to move to our speakers and she'll be the first speaker. Ms. Rio,
thank you. We start your morning speakers with Shirley King, followed by Juanita Wallace. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the persons shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 2 minutes to speak. You'll notice a timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. Again, your first speaker this morning is Shirley King.
Yes, and Ms. King is please come forward. Why don't you come forward here, because I think we've got some recognition here with this speaker. I'm gonna suspend the time on this presentation. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you so very much to the Honorable Mike Rollins, Mayor, and council members, staff, and others attending the session this morning. I am Shirley King. I serve as chair of Mayor Leffert's South Dallas Economic Development Task Force, Area 1, and we are so pleased to be here this morning to say to the council how much we appreciate the support that was provided for us. In our challenge over a 24-month period, we were asked the question, what is the single most important change that's needed in our area? And for us, it was to change the negative image that Pleasant Grove had unfortunately assumed. What it has meant to our community is that we have been able to help the community come together and recognize that we are committed to restoring the Pleasant to the Grove and to the world, to the U.S., to the state, to the county, and to the city. We will lead, and we are leading that change. I am joined this morning by one of the very important key persons in this process, Keith McCaig, who is the consultant, marketing consultant, who navigated the activities with our work. We are sensitive to the fact that many citizens have no idea how hard you work and how much of a sacrifice and commitment you make to keep our city safe, beautiful, and growing. So we wanted to make sure you knew how loved and appreciated you are, at least in one very large corner of Dallas, Pleasant Grove. Now, in case you haven't yet seen what you helped build, here are just some of the many elements that make up the rebranding campaign for Pleasant Grove. We've adopted a logo which represents the new image
that we'd like for everyone to begin to appreciate about Pleasant Grove. We have created a newsletter, which was the first issue was issued in July. We have a website that is up and running, discoverthenewpleasantgrove.org, and pole banners that have run since July and will run through the end of September. And these pole banners have captured not only the imagination, the beautiful essence of Pleasant Grove, but the community has said, we feel so proud that we are representing the beauty in Pleasant Grove. And we have gateways that are underway. We'd like to invite you to take a moment in case you have not seen, we are unveiling now a public service announcement that we hope will run on local media. If you will, take a look. We want you to know this is simply a small gesture of our appreciation and love, and a poster which embodies all the things that represent New Pleasant Grove: the rich culture, safe streets, strong families, amazing faith, beautiful state-of-the-art venues for learning and discovering the world around us, a world-class transportation system, and natural wonders that can't be found anywhere else. All of these things exist today in the Grove, and many more will soon be joining them. And thanks to you, they will become the new face of Pleasant Grove. Thanks to each of you for all your support. You have no idea, absolutely no idea, how much it has meant to us and how important your contribution has been to helping us restore the pleasant to Pleasant Grove. Come to Pleasant Grove and help us discover the new Pleasant Grove. Thank you so very much. As they receive their recognitions, we just would like to implore the council to think about this. There are two things that we hope the council will take away from our presentation today. There are no problems so great that a small group of determined, passionate, and caring citizens can't overcome. And two, that if you have these invested individuals, as we've had in Pleasant Grove, it doesn't take $1 million to turn one of the less desirable areas of our city into one of the richest. We are shining proof that grants like this work, and we encourage you to look for similar opportunities, not just in Southeast Dallas, but throughout our great city. Again, thank you very much, and we look forward to doing more business together. Thank you.
Again, thank you, Dr. King, but also thank the City Council. Without you, this would not become a reality. One thing we like to say in Pleasant Grove, there is 3-4 council members that help make up Pleasant Grove. Dwayne Caraway, we come forward, please. And also Carolyn Davis. We all 4 council members represent Pleasant Grove. So it's an honor to represent Pleasant Grove. It's a great honor to continue to represent Pleasant Grove, because it takes a whole body to make sure that we do have a great Pleasant in the Grove. But I also thank the council member to make sure that we did have $75,000 to do this. And remember, this is more than $75,000, that with the marketing, with all the promotion that we've done, with Autobahn, it's a great pleasure to be part of Pleasant Grove.
Thank you, Councilmember Atkins. Councilmember Atkins was the head of the Mayor's Southern Dallas Task Force. We took great pleasure, along with the other council members who represent Pleasant Grove, in bringing this tremendous achievement with a very small amount of money. I want to thank the council members, Ms. Lee McKinney, who is a moving force in all of Southern Dallas. But I would be remiss if I did not mention to you that the posters and the lovely folder that you have in front of you were created by Keith McKeague, standing right there. He did all of the artwork. Dr. King has continued to push the Pleasant in Pleasant Grove, as have the two people standing here and so many others who have worked with us. In the folder,
this folder,
there is a brochure, a flyer for Grove Fest. Grove Fest is the last Saturday in October. It is a community festival. Every time you hear me talk about this, you hear me say that the germ of the idea for Grove Fest came from Pauline Mitrano. It has been a significant, tremendous, incredible success. DART was our platinum sponsor last year, and they have informed me that they will be so again. The first year, we attracted nearly 2,000 people. The second year, nearly 3,000 people. We continue to build because we all work together. And Mr. Mayor, this year you will have the great opportunity to be a part of Grove Fest, and instead of Mr. Atkins having the pie in the face, you may volunteer. Grove Fest, the last Saturday in October. We are in the Grove, and it is. Thank you so much.
thank you, and we all love the Grove. One of the things that I'm learning more and more is there's so many positive things happening throughout this city, and one of our challenges is marketing communications. So when those cameras over there behind you work, you want to start to tell the story about what's happening in some of the places in Dallas. So there's a responsibility to make sure we communicate a lot of the positive things as well as the being intellectually honest in regards to the struggles. But to balance that, I think, is appropriate. The best to do that is to do marketing like we've done. So congratulations. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. King. Ms. Rios.
Thank you. We continue your morning speakers with Juanita Wallace. Juanita Wallace, please state your name and address for the record. Again, you do have 2 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls.
Thank you. Juanita Wallace, 1409 South Lamar, Dallas, Texas. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Juanita Wallace, president of the Dallas Branch NAACP. The NAACP is committed to environment justice, and we have been ever since 1993. And now here in 2011, we're fighting the battle of environmental and climate challenges in our community. Once again, the CNG head of the line, the shale gas drilling, and now the flow control. Let me give you 1 million tons of waste each year reasons why we're against it. In every one of the 44 major metropolitan areas in the United States, African Americans are more likely to be exposed to higher air toxic concentrations. As a result, African Americans are nearly 3 times likely to be hospitalized or killed by asthma. Emissions from pollution include lead, which has been tied to educational and behavioral challenges, impacting learning opportunities for children of color, and potentially contributing to the school-to-prison pipeline. The presence of toxic facilities in communities have negatively affected the property values, therefore negatively impacting the economic well-being and health. Many of the pollutants that affect human health and well-being are also advancing the progress of climate change, and climate change disproportionately impacts the civil and human rights of communities of color through the increase of frequency and severity of severe weather events. The shift and reduction of agriculture yield and accompanying impact of availability and affordability of nutritious food, as well as the rise in sea level with the resulting displacement of communities. The city's questionable decision to divert all municipal and industrial waste that are generated in Dallas by the commercial and industrial sectors to common landfills in South Dallas will result in a need for massive horizontal as well as vertical expansion to that landfill within the next few years, which will mean more traffic, potentially higher emission levels, and far more serious environmental justice consequences. These are serious public policy issues that the Environmental Protection Agency has jurisdiction over and the technical expertise to properly assess. That's why we're asking EPA at a meeting tomorrow to please assess this before the city council members and mayor move forward. The NAACP will put the power of 500,000 members, 12,000 chapters, both in Japan and Germany, and members here in the city of Dallas to provide safeguards to ensure that all communities and breathing are breathing clean air, ingesting clean water, and living and thriving on sand, safe land. Without 20 seconds to go, what price will you pay for your good health? Hopefully you will say you want pollution to be ended, you want clean air for everyone, and you certainly don't want to divert all of the trash to South Dallas. They already have enough problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wallace. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Your next morning is George Morgan.
My name is George Morgan, 2343 Vegas, Dallas, Texas, 75219. Lottery use is up and not likely to go down because people have no money to buy computers, books, or even the Dallas Morning News. The only way too many people can look for jobs is to read the paper or go online, and even minimum wage jobs are now requiring online applications. Library funding is down, having been cut in 2009, 2010, and again in 2010 and 11. And Dallas now spends less on libraries than any other big city in Texas. If we want people to come to Texas and be proud of Dallas, we need to have more library books and materials. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan.
Your next three speakers have been grouped together as they are talking on the same topic.
Yeah, I wanted to spend change the rules here a little bit since a few of you live from out of town. I thought we'd come on up together and let's give you 6 minutes amongst everybody. Is that all right? And that way you don't have to wait. Come back later. So thank you for coming in.
Okay, those speakers will be Lindbergh Williams, Kyle Coden, and Ronnie Harris. You'll notice the timer again on the wall. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Kyle Coden. I actually live in Flower Mound, but I'm representing Dallas Fire Rescue Uniform Officers Association and a member of Dallas Fire Rescue Department for 22 years. Before we get started, my brother and sister are standing with me. The loss of our brother Sunday, Todd Crotal, a stark reminder to all of us in the fire service that we take going home at the end of shift for granted. With that, I cannot express how much it meant to us that the mayor and the city council took the time to honor our fallen brother, and we thank you. The purpose we're here today is quite simply, city manager proposed a plan changing drastically the way we operate in fire communications. And the plan promises to save over $1 million. The problem is the information that has been promoted using this is exaggerated staffing numbers and salaries. The promised savings are solely on cutting staffing, and staffing does not exist. The numbers presented to us says they're going to cut from 56 to 48. Now, we have 48 slots to be at minimum staffing in the fire service. We've never been there. We've never made it. We've averaged about 44. We are currently at 47 with one more in training. And we have never, ever been at 56. So the cutting of, or the savings of $1.3 million by cutting 8 members from the number 56 is a false number. There's no savings in the schedule change. The schedule hours that we would be working would be identical regardless of working 8 hours, 10, 14, 12, or 24 hours. So there's no reduction in hourly pay, and besides that, we're on salary. The other thing that's been brought to our attention is that the city manager has been claiming that $90,000 is the average salary for us down in communications. The pay schedule for the fire rescue department is public information. The maximum for a fire rescue officer and second driver is $64,651. What I mean by maximum is they've been at a time and grade of greater than 5 years. The maximum for driver engineers is $71,273. The maximum for a fire lieutenant is $78,762. And the maximum for a captain, the highest rank on there, is $85,503. Okay, if we take the fact we got 4 captains, 12 lieutenants, 8 driver engineers, and 23 FROs, the average salary amongst us for fire communications is $71,115. This is an exaggeration of salary bomb of $20,000 per member. Now, the other problem is we want to eliminate overtime. That has been expressed by both city manager and our administration, fire administration. The problem is the shortages in minimum staffing are what creates that overtime, creates mandatory overtime. Many of us have hired back when we had other plans because they said, we cannot let you go. These vacancies exist. Like I said, we've never been at our full staffing. These vacancies exist because the decisions made by fire administration and city management. When the city manager showed all these exorbitant salaries. She selected several of the top earning members. Okay? And the problem is, she didn't account for the thousands and thousands of extra hours these members worked, so that some of us would have a life away from the station. She also failed to show the vacancies that existed creating an overtime. Every vacancy in fire dispatch creates a salary and a half to fill it at overtime. The city manager also failed to account for vacancies while the assigned members worked other assignments. We've had members working other assignments, and their position was left vacant. I want you all to know that any overtime paid since October 2010, we've earned our meet confer agreement. There's no cash overtime paid. It is earned what they call compensatory time to those members. Okay? And there's any overtime paid are those who have over 480 hours accrued. There's also in the plan a mandate to raise to have the firefighters do a shift differential equaling $85,300 per year. The city manager promised a more efficient communication center is false. Dallas Fire Rescue Communications is the most effective and cost-effective in the city, answering over 248,209 emergency assignments in 2010. This does not count the thousands and thousands of other administrative calls and logistics situations we have to deal with. We have 1,300 runs more per member than the next closest competitor. Our efficiency as average savings is over $942,300 per year based on how many runs per dispatcher we use, our efficiency. The cost savings, the average, national average for a uniform association or a uniform communication rather, is $20.61, ours is $16.41, for a savings of $1,042,250,000 based on cost effectiveness. Our efficiency provides the city nearly $2 million in savings. Finally, the city manager said we're paying them sleep on duty. This is false. We have what we call on-call time. We do not expect our firefighters to sit in the fire engine for 24 hours. We have minimum staffing levels on the floor, and we also have on-call personnel that are standing by. You know, he'll work for so many hours, and I'll come take his place, and he'll take a little way away from the station, but he's there at a moment's notice. When our fellow brother fell Sunday, the world crashed in on us. We had every member on the floor answering calls, and not only that, we had to coordinate agencies, we had to handle that run, we had to fill in back companies, we had to arrange CISM logistics, and we still had to serve the citizens of Dallas. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to my colleagues.
All right. Without much time left to say what I need to say, Kyle, you did a great job, but I want to say that I'd like to give you a brief apples-to-apples snapshot of the Houston Fire Department and Dallas Fire Department. Basically, Houston is changing to the 24-hour shift. In essence, they are going where our city manager office wants to take us. They're leaving where our city manager office wants to take us. It's a giant step backwards. We believe we're the most efficient department in the country. The Berkshire study bears this out. We have a real responsibility to the citizens of Dallas to meet the challenges of balancing the budget. And we have offers on the table, a proposal that's available at your request of suggestions to also cut the budget. But we're asking that you leave the dispatch as it is, and that in doing so, we will save the city money. We have in the past, we will in the future, and we just thank you for your time here today. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for any future considerations to the issues that we've put before you. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your professionalism, and we'll take this under advisement. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes your morning speakers, Mr. Mayor. That does conclude your morning speakers.
We've got some comments. I'd like to call on Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to make a couple comments on environmental justice. Number one, at the city of Dallas, and when we talk about environmental, we take it very seriously about environmental. One thing we talk about is at the landfill. One thing we do not accept the landfill is house away, house of mature. You do not go to the landfill. Another thing is, number one, we do monitor landfill with the quality of air there. The key situation that my main concern is, number one, we are meeting with the community, and we do have concern of the community. And one thing we do is we take the community first. The first is safety of the community, and that's what we intend to do, make sure our community is safe, make sure our children is safe in the community. And that is what I am as a council member is going to do, and that's what the city of Dallas is going to do. We take our citizen public safety first. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Yes, AC, can you come forward, please, sir?
At our last meeting, the dispatch was here at the last meeting, and Ms. Spoon asked you to meet with them. What was discussed in the meeting?
I met with them briefly, first to just get acquainted. I asked at that time if they had any additional information that they had presented to the council, which was the time before. They did not have any. They wanted some additional time to put something together, and I guess as a result of that, they're presenting this today, which is the first time I've seen it.
Okay. Now, would you do this for me? Because I've gotten a different feedback just a few minutes ago that they said you did meet, but there was not really any communications done. So if you can meet with them again, Ms. Bull, you asked them to meet with them and work out something based on, I guess, this paper that I've just seen for the first time, and to try to get back, and so we can come up with a good working relationship on how we can resolve this issue before it gets to the final budget hearing, okay? And come back and really meet with them and sit down with them. From my understanding, you guys did meet, but it was kind of a silent moment in the room.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. That ends the morning speakers. Okay. So let us move to the approval of minutes of August 3rd, 2011. Any discussion edits? All in favor say aye. Any opposed? We need a consideration of some appointments on board. Ms. Alonzo.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, please. We need to go ahead and also approve the August 8th meeting.
I'm sorry. I just read half of the line. We need to also approve the August 8th, 2011 Council Budget Briefing. Move. Second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Any opposed? Yes. Ms. Medrano.
Thank you. I'm going to have to maybe exclude one appointment on Ms. Hill. I have a conflict there.
You do have for consideration to the Park and Recreation Board. We have two individuals. One is Glenda Salazar.
Ms. Hill's appointment. I'm related to that nomination, so I will have to step out on that one.
We don't show a nominee by Councilmember Hill on the roster.
Okay. All right. Okay, I just saw the list. Okay.
Thank you. I will read the nominees for the record, please. Thank you. For the Park and Recreation Board, you have two nominees, Glenda L. Salazar, nominated by Councilmember Alonzo, and Gail Terrell, nominated by Councilmember Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. I move approval of the reappointment of Ms. Gail Terrell, renominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Tinell Atkins to the Park and Recreation Board, and further move approval of Glenda L. Salazar to serve as my individual appointee on the Park and Recreation Board of Directors to the remainder of the 2009-2011 board term and for the 2011-2013 board term.
You've all read this briefing, and if you have questions, Ms. Chipperfield can answer them. But I will tell you, The briefing and the voting item, if you've read it and you're okay with it, if you do not intend to do anything to the current tax rate of 79.70, you don't need to go through the briefing, nor do you need to vote on having public hearings. If you are sure that you're going to stay at 79.70, then we're through the morning. If there are any changes you wanted to make on this particular item. So just wanted to tell you that, so that's the end of that. And we'll move on to water if that's okay with you.
Alright, so no.
You don't need to do anything.
Hold on here for a second. Let me ask for exceptions. Is there anybody that feels that we need to review this document and put a motion on the floor to have a public hearing after hearing this soon? Okay, hearing none, then we will move to the next item, which is the water briefing.
The next briefing is, you could label it as a preview of probably some actions we're going to have to take later in the year that I want you to be aware of. We're going to have a lot of conversation about water. Scheduled, I believe, for next Monday, is that right, Jody, is the water long-range plan budget briefing.
Budget briefing for next
Monday. So this is not about the budget so much as it is about water impacts that the things that are going on within the water department and within the weather we'll have on our water usage upcoming. So that's our briefing for today, and we'll get to the budget discussion on Monday.
I'll go through this fairly quickly, but I want to give you an idea, Erica, if you just take us to slide 3.
I want to stop. I think this is very important, okay, for the citizens of Dallas. So, yes, please be brief and not tedious, but I ask us all to really focus on this, given what's happened this last summer, and water is a very important strategic issue for us, so thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I applaud that. on slide 3, to give you a quick overview of our briefing, just so you know, we have a method by which we operate our water system, whether that's reservoir modeling, pump stations, those type of things, and part of our operations plan on page 4 includes 2 big components that the council is responsible for specifically approving: drought contingency plans and emergency operations when we have some sort of catastrophe, like an outage of some kind. Possible triggers that face our system occasionally and systems throughout the country, frankly. Reduction in supplies, you have a treatment system go down of some type, power outages, those types of things. Just kind of the Murphy's Law of the water business. On page 5, when we go in to implement those types of plans, and this is in the code, chapter 49, as well as our contingency plan, is that, as you would guess, the utility director is responsible for keeping up with stuff, monitoring the system, and then reporting to the city manager when an issue needs to be, quote-unquote, on alert. Kind of what we're talking about right now is the potential for what we call stage 1 trigger, which would imply that our water supplies are below a certain capacity. And I'll get to those in a minute. But the other point is that once the city manager takes that step, we may have to publish that in the paper. To extend it beyond a 60-day period, the city council has to come back and approve that. So you guys have a role initially in approving the plans and then subsequently to continue restrictions if they're necessary. Page 6 gives you just a brief view of the different types of triggers that we pay attention to. One is delivery capacity. That's the first big bullet on that page. What that really means is that how much water I can get out of my plants to our customers. And then the second big bullet or the big trigger has to do with the inventory, the raw water supply that we use to treat water to deliver. So there's the 2 big things that we pay tedious attention to. So I'll talk a little bit about our delivery system on the next slide, on slide 8. Our system is made up of 3 large water treatment plants. They're located, as I mentioned on slide 8, with a total of about 900 million gallons a day capacity. Just in context right now, I think yesterday we pumped about 610 million gallons a day. Our highest rate so far this year is 680 million gallons a day. Our record pumpage was 789 million gallons a day. That was back in 2000. So you can kind of see the context of that. Page 9 is a quick overview map of where the plants are located. Our Bachman plant is over off of Shorecrest and Denton Drive, and our Elm Fork plant is in Carrollton. And our Eastside plant, which is the largest workhorse plant and under expansion right now, is it off US 80 in Sunnyvale. This next year, in slide 12, this is the important point about delivery capacity, not slide 12, slide 10, I'm sorry. I'll take a breath. Slide 10. We have plant expansions and improvements scheduled at our Eastside plant, both to be able to treat water for the future, regulatory improvements to that site, reliability to that site, and it's some of the equipment there, switchgear, electrical things are aged and they need to be replaced. So at the bottom of that slide is kind of the headline, for lack of a better term. Next summer, our overall delivery capacity is going to be limited to 650 million gallons a day. So when we hit 85% of that in our operation, that would indicate that we have to go into a restricted water use in order to keep demands down, primarily so fires can be fought. Keep in mind that water systems are really about, the pressure in those systems are about, is there enough water to fight fires? And when you hear cities around, like Kemp as an example, when they were losing water in their system, they couldn't fight fires if they had a fire. And clearly when they had one, they couldn't fight it. And so when you hear stories about cities restricting their usage because of their distribution system, it's because they don't have enough water out there to deliver. So that's an issue that's coming for us. We're preparing for that. We'll have some future briefings for you in that as we get closer to that demand level. The next big area that we focus on, and you hear more talk of really, is the impact of the drought. So I'll go to take you to slide 13 first. I want to go back to slide 11. This, I forgot about this chart. This is kind of a, from where you're sitting, it might be hard to see, but from your seats you can see on the map, these are like little heart, what we call little heartbeat lines, affectionately, for each of these really drought years that we've seen. Chartreuse or light blue turquoise line is the current year. You can see we have been really kind of in a low pumpage level for the first half of the year, and it has jumped up out here in this summer drought we've had. Interestingly, with the rain we had Saturday, this chart doesn't show it because it hadn't been updated for today, but it dropped down about 100 million gallons a day. We were pumping around 600, 620 the day before. Even with the five alarm fire that happened in Southwest Dallas, that was near my house, it dropped 100 MGD. And so that's the impact of outdoor watering in our system. So you can get a context of that. Now, today, it's back up to about 600 MGD, like I said earlier. So you get an idea about the 650 line, where it starts to potentially impact customers. So we need to work with a buffer here. So in the event there's a five-alarm fire, there's pressure and water to fight it. So that's just that viewpoint of that. So now about the drought, which is near and dear to everybody's heart right now. And I'm going to go to slide 13, Eric, if you would. One of the things I'd like to do is to try to help folks understand the difference between conservation measures and drought measures. Conservation is really an efficient use of resources, and drought measures are a response to reduce demand. Both have an effect of reducing demand, but drought responses are to protect the long-term water supply. So you can see on the top of slide 13, water-wise, landscaping, time-of-day watering, low flow, fixing leaks, things like that. Not mentioned here is us fixing leaks, leak detection programs that we've added. Investment in our infrastructure to maintain that so we don't have a high number of water main breaks in our system. So those are conservation related activities. Drought measures are really about how to extend your resources even further in a severe drought. Prohibiting lawn watering, restricting lawn watering, those types of outdoor uses that really do impact the volume of water we have to deliver. So just give you some examples. On slide 14 is some overview really of how we monitor that drought and the weather. We watch the lake levels daily. We watch the weather. We see forecasts. We look forward. We look back. Any number of ways you want to look at it is part of what we do in our normal course of doing business. The next slide gives you some highlights really about the different droughts. If you lived in Texas for very long, you know the kind of the story that we're in a perpetual drought interrupted by a number of storms. And so that is sometimes what the way it actually really seems to work. Our latest drought really began in from a water supply standpoint back in May of 2010 when our lake levels fell below full. From a water supply standpoint, that's really how we measure our drought conditions. Slide 16, again, an overview of that. Rainfall is, since May of last year, over 13 inches below normal. Our current depletion rate right now is about 18%, so it's taken us about 16 months to get there with that lower rainfall impact. So based on that, we forecasted that in June of, or really spring of next year, we'll be at stage one where we need to make efforts to reduce demand so we'll be able to get through the drought of record. And then those projections also are based on precipitation that we might see, hurricane, tropical storm, changes in long rain forecast supplies, as well as vulnerability of our neighbors in some cases can impact that. Slide 17 shows the National Weather Service forecast into October. Not a pretty picture for Texas. And interesting, it's not visible really very well here, but what's interesting is this part of Texas right here, East Texas, we think of it as being wet. It's been in a drought longer. The interesting thing about our water system, our lake system, is that we have lakes in both basins. So it gives us some flexibility. If one of those basins recovers sooner, it protects our supply. And a map here will kind of show that a little better. Slide 18 reinforces this drought condition. You can see in fiscal year 10, we were right at kind of the normal or the average rainfall. This is a forecast based on National Weather Service of where we'll end up. That is about 22 inches of rainfall at most. And just for reference, in the drought of record, 22 inches was a common volume of rainfall in those years. So I don't want to cry wolf, but however, this looks like a drought that we need to pay very close attention to. Slide 19 shows the various water supplies that we draw from currently and how much they are depleted on an individual basis. We throw all those, so to speak, in a bucket and get you that 18% that we mentioned before. And I'd like to just remind you, this is Lake Palestine, which is, some of you will recall, that's the integrated pipeline project to bring water in with Tarrant Regional. And where we do have our Lake Fork supply connected, we aren't currently drawing from that. We do have a small sales contract with Lumina where they divert water to help their power plant for cooling purposes there, which is an interesting issue long term for the state. It takes water to make power, it takes power to make water. So it'll be a challenge, I think, for the state going forward. The next chart, a lot of words on it. I'm not going to focus on it too much, but for the first column, which is stage one, that's where we actually have restrictions for for day certain watering. Some communities already have those either in place as part of their ordinance or they've enacted those just recently. It's just a matter of how different systems are structured. So it's just for your information, that column one, stage one, is what we would be looking at as far as actions the city would take in order to reduce demand to help us get through a drought. Slide 21 is our current forecast, or how we look at it you can see this golden line up here is our kind of current condition and a forecast here based on, again, like I mentioned before, rainfall totals, demands, and things like that. So this red line would be our forecast. So right in here is where we think we hit that number. We don't want to implement, but if we need to, we think it's good and prudent to do it going forward. So that's how I track it. But every week we update that. The little rain we had the other day was a nice break, but it didn't. It, other than that one day of demand where it just fell off the table, that's all we got out of it. And what that does tell me is people are paying attention. And that's really the best message I guess I can share with y'all. People are paying attention to their water use and what's going on outside. Lastly, on slide 22, I just want to remind you the next steps is that, again, we've asked folks to voluntarily follow our stage one rules. It's kind of like getting that habit, because that habit might be coming to you soon. And frankly, a lot of times you just need twice a week watering anyway. We continue to monitor that. We'll be bringing back to you other actions in the future if they warrant. And so with that, I'm going to return that to the mayor and open it up.
Thank you. I'll ask for questions. But would you go back to page 21 or slide 21?
Yes, sir.
The question, I think, is the obvious question. What's got to happen so that red line doesn't hit that blue line? What should we be looking for in the weather?
Simply put, a cooler, wetter condition.
Then what?
Then what we're experiencing now and a turnaround of that rainfall line.
I mean, you said you had projected typical perception for the coming months in this forecast to say that red line's going to get there.
Right.
Did I understand that?
Yes, sir.
So if we have a typical December in January, it's still going to go down there.
Because we're still behind.
So what do we have to have? What's got to happen for that to not get there?
Really what has to happen is that if there's two things that could happen. People stop watering completely.
Okay.
And then two, that we have a couple of tropical storms that train across the region. And we get 5, 10, 15 inches of rainfall.
Is it like double the precipitation, or?
I won't say double, but something in that range. And it also depends on where it falls.
Yep.
Right. If it falls in the upper reaches of the watershed, drains into the lake, that's a good thing. If it rains south of Interstate 30, doesn't help our supply.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Tu.
A couple of questions. I think I know the answer to this. When we impose, or if we impose stage one restrictions, then all of our customers that are municipalities, they impose the exact same thing to purchase water from.
We call them like restrictions. Like restrictions.
Right. Then they have to do that as
mm-hmm.
well. Okay. They can do that, though, on their own, even before we do this.
Yes, and some of them have, primarily because if their demands go up too high, they have to pay more to
okay.
us. And so if their demand goes above their current setting, usually it goes up in a million gallon increments. It costs them about $200,000 more a year to do that.
So that's how you get the finely tuned gallons targeting,
mm-hmm.
Because you know how much they're going to be using theoretically, but they can't use that. They probably won't use over a certain amount,
right?
Before they start to get charged more,
right?
Oh, I see. Okay, that makes sense. When's Lake Palestine coming on?
We project it to be sometime between 2015 and 2020, maybe as late as 2025. Just depends.
Okay. When are we going to have another session discussing future water sources?
We were planning on briefing the council in October, probably toward the latter part of October, on our longer-range water supply plan update. We're actually going to start that project this year to incorporate not only new demands, new populations, new sources, old sources that have fallen off, so that process is going to get reignited.
Do you expect the council to be making decisions, voting decisions at that time?
No.
When do you anticipate that?
I would say within 12 to 18 months of October, as far as new different supplies.
You will be expecting us to take a vote on something?
Yes. Because you adopted in 2005 recommendations to the statewide plan, the Regency plan, and we've been working off that list. Some things aren't on that list anymore. And then we may have updates on Oklahoma Water. We may have more updates on the path or not for Marvin Nichols, which is in the Sulphur Basin. We lost Lake Bastrel, at least from a reservoir side.
I think my real question is, okay, when do you expect us to vote on an addition, a specific additional water source? Not the plan, but a specific one. And what I mean by that is, things fall off the plan, they go on the plan. Things that are on the plan are not acceptable to the state, that's why they fall off the plan. When is it that you anticipate that we'll be voting on a specific water source?
We follow the plan. How you would vote on a specific water source is when we get ready to spend money on the planning or the... Mm-hmm. So there'd be two votes. You vote a plan and we go work on it unless it falls apart. And then as we bring the specific detail to you, we'll spend money on it.
So let me rephrase the question. When do you anticipate us, since we vote on a plan, I voted on it once or twice, I guess, besides in here, but we've never voted on the specific source, the implementation of that plan. That's what I'm trying to get at. Are we talking 18 months?
May I give this a swing, Mary?
Yes.
Let me give you, like, Bastrel as an example.
Right.
One of the options to deal with the loss of that lake, which is south of Lake Palestine, was to look at a run of the river permit. And what that really means is that we look at using a river intake to pull water off the river and either store it in Palestine or build an off-channel reservoir. If we were going to make an application or partner with Upper Nation to do that, I'd bring that decision to you and say, we want to go study that as an option and we want to file a permit application.
Mm-hmm.
That step is really part of our long-range planning review that we want to kick off, really update again in October.
Pulling those permits is actually a part of the long-range plan?
Yes.
Okay, so when you vote on the long-range plan, if there is a permit to be pulled for the next source on the plan, you go ahead and do that. And that we may or may not know that.
You'll know it. Because I have to have council approval to make application for water rights. Because y'all would be committing to the expense of that, to the study of that.
I think you know where I'm going with this.
Yes.
There's been frustration in closed session, and I don't want to go into that, but I think you know where I'm going with the line of questions, and I'll follow up with that offline, or if we go into another closed session, follow up with that.
Okay.
During my town hall meetings with council members, I went ahead and began to talk to my citizens about the increase in water rates that we'll be having for the next 2 years, but put it into a context. I know we talked about this at the last meeting. Began to put it into context as to why we would need those increases, and I don't want to say it was well received, but I think it was received in the spirit that from which it was given, which was to explain to our citizens that the drought is with us and these are concerns of ours, and that our infrastructure needs to be replaced and that we really are going to have to expect these types of increases. And I think that they really did understand that, and I would encourage you all to continue to do that at your town hall meetings, because I think it was a really important educational opportunity at that time. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hato.
Mayor, and Linda asked my question on the Lake Palestine schedule. Hopefully when you brief us in October, you'll give us a more specific idea of where we are with that. We've talked about water in the meetings that we've had, so the neighborhood association meetings, and just trying, I'm trying to cue them up to make them understand that water is going to be a huge commodity. We will have to continue to increase the rates because it is going to be almost like it's going to be very, very hard to get at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my question on that. Now, on the Lake Palestine, and if this is for the October briefing, just let me know. Targeted million gallons per person on the we're looking at Lake Palestine, obviously, to increase our reserves. What are we contemplating for transferring that or translating that into what our citizens will get or what Dallas will get once the Palestine schedule has started, or in other words, what are we telling them? What are the benefits of Lake Palestine?
Well, bringing Lake Palestine water in adds 100 million gallons a day of supply.
Perfect.
Inventory.
Right.
Through our system.
So it's more inventory, and we should pursue it. And then my only other question was, can you talk a little bit about what we do when we open the fire hydrants and flush them out and people see water coming out of fire hydrants while we're asking
sure.
them to conserve?
Sure.
Thank you.
There's two different situations where that occurs. One, where we have new construction, where a main has to be pressurized and tested, and then it has to be drained. That's one type of situation when that happens. Another situation that occurs is that the system has, and this is not unique to Dallas, all water systems have this, are faced with this issue. We have dead ends in our system where water, my next street over has a dead end at it, and so if demand isn't high enough, the water will get stale. And so it has to be flushed out to maintain the chlorine residuals in it. The other challenge that we have, and that's part of our capital program, is that we need to make water quality improvements with the water leaving our plant. It's chemically a little unstable. And so as it travels through the system, it can get old too soon, and we have to flush it out. It is a challenge when you're asking people to conserve, and then we also have to flush to really maintain the water quality. So we're doing a number of things as part of these investments to reduce that. It's all about trying to conserve that water.
Okay. Thank you, Jody. That, I think, will explain to the people listening why they sometimes see the water gushing out of fire hydrants and we're asking them to water, only certain times. There's probably not a way to give us a schedule on that or where you think you're going to do the next flush or what. You probably can't. Is there a way to give us that information?
We know certain parts of town that we have regular flushing because of the, either the age of the system or the age of the water. And I could get, if you have an individual issue,
yeah.
We can address that.
Okay. Very good.
Typically, you find them in the eastern part of the city.
Eastern
typically.
Part of the city.
Typically. Typically eastern and then southeastern. But it's pocketed.
And then, Jody, the replacement where we're replacing the water mains right now, and there's lots of construction going on in Dallas, the larger the pipe, the better it is so that we don't have to do these flushings and the water continues to travel better than with the smaller pipes that are in, especially in Oak Cliff, we've got 50-year-old pipes.
Does that
help with the flushing?
The pipe size is about standards for fire protection. It helps
okay.
with pressure and volume.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Masato. We've got a couple logistic issues, and we've got plenty of people that want to ask questions. So we're going to, at this time, break into executive session, okay? Grab lunch. Do our business, come back here hopefully by 1 o'clock, 1:15, and then finish these questions because there are several hands up and I don't want to rush anybody. So it is now 11:40 a.m. August 17th. The City Council will now go into closed session in section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. We'll see you back this afternoon. Thank you.
Future reservoirs, and we are going to have a hearing on that pretty soon.
In October.
Do we have anything working that's in progress for future reservoirs right now?
Yes.
Is that the one that got the lawsuit against?
We're working on the alternatives that are in the plan that was adopted in 05, so we can talk about that in our next briefing.
Okay.
Some of it might be suitable for a closed session, frankly, but
okay, good.
We'll give you an update on where we are.
Yeah, I know, and we had some other alternatives that we could maybe do in Oklahoma, but I know now's the time to get it done, because I know our last reservoir issue we had back in the 50s, I think, or 50 years ago, we're using now, and it's because of them that we've got what we got now. So we want to make sure we stay ahead of that game. But we are going to have a hearing.
Toward the end of October, I think, is what.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. 5 points. The first one is this. If anyone saw over the weekend the New York Times, not only make the New York Times about the better block, but also about our drought. I could make this available to anyone. There's a story: as Texas dries out, life falters and fades. The state of Texas could be facing a mega drought, and no one knows what to do. So it's an interesting article in this last weekend's New York Times. My second question would be: our annual rainfall is about 36 inches.
That's close to.
And essentially we have 2 months, May and October. With May we average over 5 inches, and October we average over 4 inches. So with those 2 months we're getting just a quarter of our rain. So I would like to have a briefing about this in October. I think we'll better sense where we are in this drought. October's one of our big rain months. It's 2 big rain months. May 5 inches usually over. So they know we have a short indicator of where we are in the drought. Have a follow-up briefing in October. Also, how would you compare our, I think you go to page 6 of the presentation, how would you compare our triggers for the drought management to other similarly situated metropolitan areas? Would you describe these as conservative or?
Yes, I would.
Ms. Scripps, could you speak up? I didn't hear your question.
On page 6, we have the water demand management triggers. And if you could comment on those to similarly situated metropolitan areas, are these considered conservative? And which other cities would be good references with similar staging?
Well, different systems have different triggers for different reasons. And so I think that all of the water suppliers in the region work their triggers similarly. They overlap drought of record history. They overlap demand history associated with those triggers and run numerous models to determine those. And so all of these triggers that are set make assumptions about demand reduction. So all of us expect that have these stages, expect a 5% or a 10%, whatever that might be, related to their demand. So, are we conservative, more conservative, less conservative? We're consistent with engineering practice and water planning practice. Do I call these conservative? I call them realistic. Could I have a drought worse than a drought of record? Yes, I could. And yes, I might be. And so that's why we stay on top of it. And you'll hear about it more in October, because I'm sure it won't go away by then. So every chance I get, you'll hear about it.
My first question would be, as water is going to become more and more of a precious commodity, what are we doing at the city for to encourage residents to use gray water as well as rain water collection? What are our programs in both those respects?
There's two sides to that question. The first, gray water use will involve building code changes that we don't currently have, to my knowledge, and so I'd have to go back and research that. We don't have any programs for that, per se. Secondly, rainwater harvesting. We have classes and things like that for folks to attend to teach them how to use rain barrels and those types of things to connect to their gutters if they choose. There's some communities out west that have outlawed that because that water drains back to their lakes. But I think that there's a balance there for folks.
Well, I'd say that's something we need to look at moving forward, as there's going to be more and more of a demand on residents. We're projecting increases in water bills going up year after year. So we look at our building code with respect to gray water usage and start to encourage it. See if we have best practices there. Encourage the council to look at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Margolin. Excuse me. Okay, Mr. Caraway was next. He's not here. Ms. Davis.
Yes, thank you so much. Now, I was looking on page 20, and is this going to be like a marketing material that you're sending out?
When we kick off stage one, we will have a marketing or a campaign for that for folks.
Now, I do like the one that you have here restricting commercial car washes. Is there anything that we can do with those commercial car washes that have a lot of people hanging out, you know, washing cars, and they are paying the people to wash the car? I guess these guys that kind of live in the stall or drugs in the stall, you know, because water is just going on and on and on and on. Can we look at something to prohibit that?
Well,
if we can.
We could. However, these church days doesn't prohibit the use of commercial car washes. It does restrict washing vehicles by hand, like at your house.
Oh.
So that stage one doesn't impact commercial car washes.
Oh, okay.
So maybe we weren't clear there.
Okay, that's what I said. So you're saying that we should, at home, if we're washing our cars, you're saying not to wash our cars.
Then you need to use a bucket and not let the water run down the street while you're washing it.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
Okay. Now, the last question. You guys, you used to do really good with your marketing materials and letting people know about how to save water, things you need to do. Are you guys going to keep that campaign going?
Yes, ma'am. That's part of our proposed budget. There's money in there to keep doing that.
Okay. Now, do you guys have places where you can go and buy one of those hoses, those things you put on your water hose, where it won't let the water, it just water the grass, not go into the off-street?
I'm not quite sure I know of that device. We do offer some mm-hmm. devices for that. We can check into that. I'm not quite familiar with that particular device.
Well, Target has them, because I have one you can just plug to your water hose, and it just supposed where it just waters my grass, and the water doesn't go on the sidewalk or it drains off, you know, into the sewer. It's expensive, but I did buy one. It's at Target, so that might be something.
I'll check into that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Caraway is not here, so we'll pass him. Thank you, Jody. Appreciate it. Ms. Rios, I think we're ready for our afternoon speakers. Before we do that, I just wanted to talk to the council about my process. Thank you. I've been working on the committee selection, so everybody, and I've been thinking about that. I've got two more meetings face-to-face that I still have to do this week. And so next week, early next week, I will probably send that out. If it's all right, I'll probably call individuals and talk to them, but I'll probably send a memo to the council and explain everybody's assignments and my learning and kind of my missions and objectives I'd like to have for this. I think it's been a great process. Everybody's been fabulous. I just want to thank you personally at your openness to serve on multiple things. As we work through that, I think the citizens should know that while we've got some opinions, we don't have a lot of selfishness around the group. So thank you very much. So with the afternoon speakers, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If I may, please, you do have agenda item number 3 on the agenda, so I need to read it.
Oh, yes.
And whether or not there's any action taken by the council. Thank you.
Okay.
Item number 3 is authorized number 1. Public hearings to be held on September 7, 2011 and September 14, 2011 to receive comments on a proposed tax rate and number 2, a proposal to consider adoption of an 81.78 cents per $100 valuation tax rate or a lower rate as may be proposed by the City Council on September 28, 2011.
So, no, hold on here. Hold on here for a second. I know. Well, let me just explain here. This was the action after the first briefing that no one wanted to have a public hearing. So if no one wants to have a public hearing, there would be no motion and there would be no second. So we'll give everybody a chance to take a motion if they want, so hearing no motion. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We continue.
Sorry.
We continue now with your afternoon speaker. Your first.
Now we got it.
Your
Thank
first
you.
Afternoon speaker will be Hilton Kelly. Hilton Kelly, not present. Your next speaker, Ernest Mason, not present. Ozumba Lunks will be followed by Sandra Crenshaw. Mr. Lunks, I'll first recite the speaker guidelines, please. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred for further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. You are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice a timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking. Allow the next individual their turn. Please direct your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Thank you.
Merrill, I want to give thanks to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ who died in our will. We have a right to the tree of life. God on Calvary for us. All our sins were put upon him. But what I do want to say is, I've been assaulted down here, Merrill. I've been assaulted twice by DART police. I've been stopped 3 times by DART police. And I know what racism is. It was racist stop, social economic stop, because I pick up cans too. And I know what racism is. I've been in Dallas about 3 years ago. We live in a decaying society and a warped society. Things are bad. And I have white friends. And like I was telling one of the council members here, a lot of people say that in the goals and passes. But this man right here, T.J. Murphy, he's a attorney here in Dallas. His last office was in the Cowboys building was 675 years ago. And he was the best man I ever had. And I named my private investigation company after T.J. Murphy security force. I'm not a criminal. I have a lot of problems since 2005. Nobody would talk to me. Not even my own council representative, nobody. Talk to me and go back to the powers that be and tell us our problems. Tell them what we're talking about, me, Hoffman, and with Marvin Crenshaw. So what I do want to say is I've been to the, I talked to the governor's office, Rick Perry. I went to Rick Perry's office, to the state justified on the Bush period and the Bush deal, and nothing has happened. You know, I don't know if y'all look at me like a warrior or what. I don't even care my kids, my grandkids, my niece and nephews. But I don't like the way I've been treated in America as a black man. Listen to me on my chest, I'm stepping on myself like the rest of Israel and say, from the white man, because, you know, hey man, I'm from the bad, but I'm 65 years old. And I'm not satisfied with the way I live. I ain't raised here, man. If I always been saying, where's the white man, get in front of me and start the stuff. You know, and I don't like that. I'm not happy with this, and you all won't talk to me. I was assaulted, and I tried to defend myself. You all didn't try me again to come back during the 6 months in the interior, in the castration. What's wrong? It's a drop.
But it's a lot of things going on in my life, you know, and I'm not a criminal, but you all treat me bad. You still are treating me bad. So, I don't have much to say, Mayor, so I'd like to talk to you and Mr. because he held a meeting and a lot of people wouldn't come to the meeting and they didn't say, oh, Zoom, I was sick. They just totally disregarded me. How would you feel like you were being disregarded? Judge you not. Don't do judge do the same thing. Doing to others you have them doing to you. If you're a Christian, you better check yourself. God is coming back to you in the revelation now. And I know God is with me. Whether you kill me or I live, God is with me. I had a counselor in the dig of the grace through. God saved my life. I had talked to you. I'm walking, getting around good, lift weights, do everything I want to do. God is with you. God has blessed you. I know God is with me. You mess with me? I'm not prepared to put a monkey on your back. I'm prepared to put a gorilla on your back. So, you know, I don't mess with nobody. I'm a private person. And I don't want dark police messing with me to tell this racist police, J-A-B-B-O-T-T, and the rest of these dark police, leave me alone, man. You done messed me 3 times in less than 2 years. Leave me alone. And I want to know why. I'm working on him right now. I'm going back to the Justice Department to stuff that this stuff going on. You don't hear that little. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is Sandra Crenshaw. Not present. William Hopkins. Not present. Marvin Crenshaw, not present. Robert Cacciarelli.
Building it, I can't, I don't know what to say about who thought about how it is. We have 250 people, 9 feet, crammed 1 inch mat, and you expect the homeless to make it out there. Unbelievable. You lost your mind. Whoever thought about that 7-8 years ago, no one can live through those conditions. That must be the only building that is not air conditioning and open like that. I mean, it's got to come down, Mayor. It's got to come down. There's no way to fix it with a fan, or water comes out of the fan. It's just unlivable. I've been saying it, and City Council has just been staring at me, and it's, you know, it gets kind of ridiculous and frustrating that I have to come here every week and I get a stone wall of faces of something so easy to be understood, but it's so hard for the people to understand what I'm saying or don't want to. Ms. Hunt, I gave you, this has to do with your, the park, Main Street Garden, okay? And, you know, I just read in the paper about calling the homeless bums and maybe, but as you can see there, I'm, you know, semi-homeless, and you can see my college transcript, you know, where I have a circle. You know, you guys do a lot of damage control right now. You lost a lot of people, not only homeless, but people that respected you, what you said. And you lost a lot of respect and you lost a lot of votes so far, what I've been heard. And it just, you want to know why the homeless come to the garden. Well, why don't you, like I said to every city council member for the last 10 times, go there and stay there for 2 nights. I'll go there whenever you want to come. Go stay at the pavilion. Stay there during the day. The courtyard, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. The welcome house, there's nothing there for them to go. So they go to the Main Street Garden. And what gets me is you have the dogs there. Multi or upper level income people with a dog, excuse me, and they crap and they urinate all over the place. You know, it's common. And why you don't get over them, you know, it's disgusting. I have to walk in urination. You know, it's beyond me why you said that. And you know, I've been here a lot of weeks and I can do a lot of help with what's going on at the bridge and what's going on with the homeless. As you see, I've been had a massive education, and I made a few dumb mistakes, but I can really help. But there's got to be communication. Well, I ask a simple question. If anybody wants to stay at the pavilion, you got to live through it. It's like hands-on. If you don't live through it, you don't know what's going on. And so Ms. Hunt says, well, I don't know what's going on. Why can't they stay at the bridge? Well, don't Ms. Hunt stay down there. Can you do that for anybody else, one of your assistants? You know, stay there one night. Stay at the courtyard. You'll find out why they leave. There's nothing there. That's why they go to the Main Street Garden, so they get away from the bridge for all the hectic, all the stuff that goes on down there. But the only way you can do it is for someone to stay down there. That's all I have to say. But please do it, or we're just going to have the same problem. I have to come back every week for the next 3 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Caprioli. Would you make sure you hang around? I'd like to spend just a moment with you. Thank you.
Your next speaker, Trina Trish.
Good afternoon, everyone. Let me say, Trina Trish, Dallas City, Texas. I'm a Texan. And I'm here to stay. Nevertheless, I didn't come from the gutter. I don't act like the gutter. And I don't treat people like the gutter. I obey the laws. And I expect the law to obey the laws. And so even as it relates to speakers and protocol, I'm glad that we're following the Constitution. I carry that along with my Bible. I do appreciate that. Kudos to those who make the necessary changes. Nevertheless, the bridge is a problem. Government agencies is a problem. We're talking about wastewater management and all. Guess what? We were supposed to be conserving energy. And like I said, there are people in homes sweating while government buildings were freezing. How about that? We're talking about managing the water while people at home are cutting their water supply off and not watering their lawn. It's the government doing the same thing with the sprinklers and everything else. You lead by example. How about that? You lead by example. I went to the bridge on purpose Monday. Because again, I have Trina Trish Teaching Ministries, I have Trina Trish Handymade Service, Trina Trish Publishing Company, and I'm about to do another business. But nevertheless, I went there to ask them for a bus voucher. Because again, I have to walk everywhere. And what they told me was, in order to get a bus voucher, I have to take a physical with LifeNet. In the bridge's cafeteria. They're a partner. That seems a little bit unethical to me. If everybody that went to the bridge to use the Texas workforce, and guess what, I don't have to take a physical to use the Texas workforce anywhere else but the bridge. That's unethical. That's why the firemen are crying for money. And yet some are dying, and you're playing around, because LifeNet might pay into your campaign funds or do things for you. I'm looking at who you're honoring and who you're taking pictures with, and then who you're not taking pictures with. How about that? let's make some changes, save some money, and do what's right. Not for your campaign, not for your private little endeavors, but for the citizens of Dallas and the state of Texas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your final speaker, Gwayne Wooten, is not present. That concludes your speakers this afternoon.
Thank you. Who's this?
I'm sorry, sir. I've called everybody. His name was called. Would the council consider suspending the rules to allow him to speak?
We got it. Please come forward.
Please state your name and address for the record, sir. You will have 3 minutes to speak. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ernest Mason, 1900 South Ewing. Is there some matter with this microphone? Hello? There we go. That's
yeah,
all right.
I need to get up on it.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. I just want to say it's a pleasure to speak in front of you guys today. I was here this morning prepared to speak, but as they say, sometimes you must adjust. I have to say that I'm... really honored because I was speaking on behalf of the Dallas Youth Council founded by Dwayne Carraway, and while speaking, guess who walked in the room? Mr. Atkins and Mr. Rollins. At the time, I didn't know Mr. Rollins, but I did, I didn't know him and didn't recognize the man, I recognized the sacrifice he made. Out of all the candidates that were running, he was the only one who showed up to come and inspire the youth. And I thought to myself, wow, this man made the sacrifice to come out on a Saturday morning and reach these kids. And as I followed the debate, he was the one always talking about the kids. And I realized to myself, I said, okay, there's something going on here. Now, y'all pay attention to this because it's going to bless you right here. All right. As an author, authors foreshadow, which means that an author foreshadows, that's a technique they use to show you what's about to happen next. So when I thought about it, God is the author of life. And a lot of times he'll give us clues to show us what steps we need to take in life. To those who aren't spiritual, this may sound silly, but let me show you how it pays off. At the time, I was actually preparing to volunteer for another mayor candidate, but when I saw how God connected me to Mr. Rollins and how we had the passion for connecting the youth, I said, out of all the candidates that could have walked in that day, why Mike Rollins? And then when I started to hear him speak about the youth, I said, out of all the ones, maybe there's something going on here that I should pay attention to, a bigger picture. And so as a result, I connected with Mike Rollins, and I appreciate what he says when it comes to the youth. Now, how does that matter? Well, people say, well, you know you must adjust, but when? Well, you adjust when you see clues. And the clues right now I see is a lot of youth in schools. If you go into some of these schools in the southern sectors, they're disrespectful in the hallways. They use profanity like everyday language. And there's a lot of issues going on with youth. And we're at a moment in society where we need people to step up and have a greater impact on the youth. Because I heard someone say this morning, you can't always keep doing what you've been doing, but you've got to do something different and you've got to do something more. So as you guys deal with the budget, I pray that you put together some kind of collaborative effort, whether it's a youth services division, whether it's a youth services team, or something that's included in the budget that's specifically set up for youth. Now, I know we deal with youth, and we have the rec department, and we have all these other things, and a lot of us depend on nonprofits to service the youth. We depend on the school districts to service the youth, but like we saw the Mayor's Back to School. The Mayor's Back to School was successful because it was a collaborative effort between the schools, nonprofits, and the city. Not just an occasional event here or there, but a sustained effort on behalf of the city where they have a team in place to reach young people. That has to be a strategy. That has to be something included in the budget because our youth are continuing to fall by the wayside. And if we don't invest in their success, we're going to get less and less. And so I encourage you today as you are looking into the budget, see if there's something we can do to create a partnership with the youth, with the schools, and with the nonprofits so you don't have three nonprofits doing a youth event in 1 week when they could all team up through coordinating through the city to reach these youth. So thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I'm glad you're in office because I know it's God's will. Thank you very much. I appreciate y'all. Thank you. Thank you.
That does conclude your speakers this afternoon.
Very nice.
That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Do we have a motion for adjournment? Michelle? Second? second. We adjourn this meeting at 2:31 p.m. Thank you very much.